Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Saturday, March 27th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Two very important topics that we're going to cover along with a few other things. Masks at the end. So if you're important, it's going to be sort of a trailing off part with this video that we're going to watch and listen to, but it really demolishes the mask narrative as our work has this entire time, which is all vindicated. But the two main topics today are going to be something very interesting. One of which I just almost couldn't believe it was true until I did the research and found out that yes, it's very, very much true. And that it has even been admitted by other parts within this story, but there were U.S. veterans that were suing drug companies over what they were calling bribes to Iraq, and specifically money that was being funneled to what they were calling terrorist organizations, which were the militias in Iraq at the time that were defending Iraq against an illegal invasion. We'll go over that when we get into that part. But what's really interesting is guess who those drug companies were? AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. What an interesting coincidence. And these were companies that were basically bribing entities to get drug deals, or that's what we're told anyway. I wonder what else was happening over there. But what's interesting is to show you yet again groups that are morally ambiguous. They're groups that are right now we're trusting with information that is driving policy that were shown to be profiting off of a war zone, an illegal war, mind you, and even more so, doing so that's funding the side that is the bad guy side in the ongoing war. I mean, and this is a company that's currently involved with this. It's baffling. But we're also going to talk about some other interesting discussions around quite a few things. One that really, what's the right word for it? I almost expected this because we've talked about this already. But at the same time, it's something that is really going to send some shockwaves throughout the whole alternative independent media. But this is in regard to Parler and FBI and what they're now admitting. But what's interesting is Parler is admitting, not so much admitting, but proving that they were not the catalyst, or they didn't allow what happened on January 6th. And we'll go through it. They very clearly are completely debunking the mainstream media narrative. One, that they were the ones that allowed it. And two, that was even where it happened on Parler. In fact, it was primarily on Twitter and Facebook, and of course, they didn't care about those ones. But on top of that, Parler seems to be admitting something very interesting, that they were letting the FBI know what their users were doing. Now, you could argue that there's a reason that is necessary, especially if you believe what they were doing was threatening violence, and we'll get into that. But nonetheless, I argue that's going to be very upsetting to the Parler users. But I want to start off with some important points in regard to foreign policy and a few other things as we've taken to doing lately. And I will do my best not to take an incredibly long amount of time, but these actually do seem to relate to everything else that we're talking about. And my point with these first few in general, just to show you how seemingly, I would say desperately, it seems that this Biden administration is trying to just shoehorn in the old style, right? We're going right back to all the same psyops, right? All of a sudden, US makes large military hardware delivery to Ukraine's army after Biden pledges Crimea is Ukraine. We're digging that up. But I mean, this is really like after all this, and that just, he just decides to be like that old thing. We're going to make a big, the whole point is about creating tension for between Russia and the United States, or at least creating the illusion of that to justify their foreign policy and all sorts of things. If by chance you can hear the incredible thunder in the background, that's because there's an incredible storm here that came after a whole bunch of crisscrosses in the sky, you know, all that. But this is really, really telling to me that they're digging this one up specifically. Now, this story, as you hopefully know, I'm not going to dive into extensively. I'll include these articles for you to look at for yourself. One, understand that the people that they're talking about, Ukraine, I shouldn't say it like that. The government in Ukraine is an openly neo-Nazi government. This is something the U.S. government has supported the whole time. Now, this is really the point of this. First of all, in this article is to point out that human rights activists demand that Israel specifically stop arming the neo-Nazis in Ukraine, because that's not ridiculous at all, because that's absolutely happening. As it says, the arming of the neo-Nazi groups by Israel has come under the spotlight once again. This time, it's weapons that are ending up in the hands of the right-wing Ukrainian militia that openly espouses neo-Nazi ideology. Now, the current government there is complete. This is what we're talking about. And now this is a government that's supported by the U.S. And even in I want to dive into that story. I'm sure you can tell there's a lot we could talk about there, but that will trail us away, to come back to the Crimea part, which is the point. I just wanted to make sure we understand what this government is that your government's supporting, even while we have this crazy frenzy about white nationalism while we're supporting that elsewhere. It's just ridiculous. It's all the things they tell you to get you worked up when they don't really care about any of this stuff. But to the Crimea point, a great article, and you should read that article as well. Read this one as well. It gives you a background. But as this says, stop saying Putin invaded Ukraine and annexed Crimea. That's not true. And this is obscenely easy to prove. But just so you understand the basic facts, and you hopefully will research these for yourself or read the article, come to your own conclusions. Putin did not invade Crimea in 2014. Russia has a naval base in Sevastopol, Crimea, and thus is normal for Russian soldiers to be in Crimea. Now, first of all, people will try to make this out to be some kind of a pro-Russian point. No, it's a pro-facts point. It's not okay who was there. China, Russia, France, or England. It doesn't matter. Or the UK. It's a fact. And you can look this up for yourself. It's the same as the Syria lie or the Bolivia lie or the Afghanistan lie or the Iraq lie or all the other lies that come from this government. Crimea wasn't even truly a part of Ukraine. It was known to the anonymous Republic of Crimea after the dissolution of the USSR. Putin did not annex Crimea. Crimea had a referendum and the people overwhelmingly chose to go with Russia. 95%, in fact, or more. Now, why the referendum was not rigged? More than 75% of the Crimeans speak Russian as their native language. Obviously, they would choose to join Russia. There's also intense and overt anti-Russian racism in Ukraine. For example, since 2014, Ukraine has banned Russian TV stations, Russian social media websites, etc. So when you have 75% of the country that speaks Russian and is Russian, or, you know, is more so connected to the Russian side, that makes more sense. Now, all of that aside, this is stuff that you can clearly see when you actually talk to people in this location, which is not what the mainstream will do. But also realize how dumb it is to say, no, it wasn't annexed. It was taken. But then the referendum was also rigged, though, because those two things are not opposites, right? Of course, as always, they're covering all their bases. You know, one side of it, you argue that it didn't really happen. But when you actually have to get into it, you go, no, but it was rigged, though. So did it not happen or was it rigged? Yeah, who cares? It's just fake. Russia, bad guy. You know, that's how this goes. But the point, not to get too long into it, is that they're dredging this back up again just to create tension and to divert your attention away from what's really going on. And guess what else is happening? North Korea snaps back at Biden over criticism of launches. All of a sudden, this old psyop swings back into view as it seemingly just disappeared over the last so many years. And the moment Biden steps in, Kim Jong-un just speaks up and goes, the U.S. is a danger. Out of nowhere, nothing even happened. Why? Because I think this is clearly something that's always meant to keep you distracted. Where else? Russia, of course, in the same way, Britain's military to intensify activities against the new threat of Russia. In their narrative, we're all in the middle of this pandemic and everyone's all inverted and working on things. What the only group out there that's currently marching around and still doing all kinds of stuff like that is the U.S. government. In regard to this discussion, right? Not Russia, but it's just funny that this is the new threat. It's about keeping the same old narratives going, right? You don't know what to do, blame Russia, right? Well, Biden just admitted, and hopefully to make you snicker a little bit before we get into some of the more serious points, Joe Biden confirms to plan run in 2024. And I said, hey, Biden, let's just try to get through breakfast first, okay, bud? Maybe shooting a little too high. 2024, maybe a little far to look, you know, but maybe that's just my take. But in regard to the government and what they continue to do, let's recognize that this government is someone that we shouldn't be trusting, or an entity we shouldn't be trusting, to say it correctly, because of what they have verifiably done and continue to do, not because of some conspiracy theory or because of anything else, but because they have, including Biden personally and people in his administration personally, have absolutely been involved with some horrendously wrong, horrendously illegal actions. Now, this one is something covered by Common Dreams, which we've talked about in the past. Now, as we're screaming about how much they care about your health, let's consider this. U.S. military ordered, quote, clandestine burning of toxic chemicals in poor neighborhoods, right? But we're concerned about all the smaller things, right? But the U.S. government is the biggest polluter on the planet. As they scream about how we need to change everything for the Great Reset, they're the one. It's funny how they point to China as one of these major polluters, but recognize this. This is a fact. The U.S. military is the largest polluter on the planet, and it's routinely shown. I mean, I as well just show them now before we get into the article. I've covered this 1,000 times over, and you can do your research on this. The number one worst polluter on the earth is the U.S. federal government. That's 2012. Here it is in courts. The U.S. military is the biggest polluter, more than 100 countries combined. So if you're asking yourself, wait, how does that make sense? They're constantly pointing to China as the biggest polluter. It's because they don't want you to know the reality. Now, is China doing horrible pollution? Yeah, of course they are. They're probably doing things we can't even see all over the place. But the point is the U.S. military is openly polluting more so than 100 countries combined while telling us that we need to change our lives. It's just classic hypocrisy. And realize the people that are supporting all of this Great Reset and Biden and all this are the ones that believe we're going to change everything while they're the ones supporting this still right now. But back to this story, this is a really, really hard thing. This is the same concept that we're the negligence. And of course, in regard to people that don't have the resources to fight back. Now, this is basically the idea that they took this chemical, something they had to get rid of, and they decided to move it from a location that they were getting pushback from over to these low-end neighborhoods where people weren't going to give them any resistance. I mean, there's no other way to see this, in my opinion. Now, it's called aqueous firefighting foam. It's a toxic forever chemicals that make up the foam and are linked to a range of cancers, development disorders, immune dysfunction, and infertility. Now it says, quote, in defiance of common sense and environmental expertise, the Department of Defense has enlisted poor communities across the U.S. as unwilling test subjects in the toxic experiment with burning AFFF. Now we can assume that it was some, you know, just, I mean, we always like to assume that there's not some kind of an agenda, not some nefarious motive. But at the end of the day, how many times do we need to see these people experimenting or at least using things around people that they don't concern themselves with the side effects? I tend to think more on the experiment side. And that's where I feel like this is going in regard to pretty much everything we can see right now. We are being tested on. And I'm starting to see this picture come into view from not just right now from COVID-19, but from a long time leading up to now. And possibly all with that mindset for what we're dealing with now. Why would they choose specifically only poor communities? That's not a coincidence, guys. This is from David Bond, Associate Director of the Center for the Advancement of Public Action at Burlington College, noting that scientists, the EPA, and even the Pentagon officials have warned that, quote, burning AFFF is an unproven method and dangerous mix that threatens the health of millions of Americans. Quote, in effect, the Pentagon redistributed its AFF problem into poor and working class neighborhoods. Oh, and guess what happened? Nothing. Right? Accountability, right? Because we're all about law and order here. As they continue to march around the world and pollute. And by the way, this doesn't just happen. This happens like things just like Iraq, where they will occupy, destroy, and rape and pillage and steal resources and then just burn, leave all kinds of equipment or burn things off. I mean, we've covered this in the past, and it's horrendously bad for the planet. But testing is something I want you to think about. Experimenting on people, right? Maybe there's more going on here. Maybe there was more happening about what they wanted to see, what would happen or how we would respond. There's more happening around a lot of this, in my opinion. Now, bringing this into sort of a, you know, psychological aspect of this, keep the experimental part in your mind, but this, I wanted to make sure we saw this as well. This isn't even new. This is from the first of, I think I even pointed this out back in the beginning and I forgot to tie this in with the larger picture. So far, for the podcast, this is a tweet that says, U.S. Army Captain Emily Rainey has resigned after leading a group of people from North Carolina to D.C. Rainey was a psychological operations officer. So on January 6th, so far, we know that there was an FBI informant leading a militia group. There was another FBI informant leading another militia group, or at least, let's say, in leadership positions. We know that there was someone they say used to be a CIA agent that just was involved. But, you know, because we know how often people are ex-CIA agents. And now on top of that, or in addition, we have Rainey, who was a psychological operations officer. All of them present at this thing that was totally not a psychological operation, was totally just only an insurrection, and we barely got away with our lives, right? That's not to say that there wasn't very clear violence and very clear criminal activity or people that clearly intended to commit violence. That's to say that this was created and driven by people like this, in my opinion. At the very least, to have two FBI agents, a CIA agent, and a military psychological operations officer to pretend like that's just coincidence is unbelievable to me. But you do you, right? But the point is, bringing it to the parlor discussion, is we are being manipulated and tested. in a lot of ways. And I believe this whole thing was designed to create the very threat they point to justify whatever there is they're trying to do in regard to domestic terrorism in this country, or, you know, using that excuse to accomplish it. So thinking about that, there's been a lot of people that have argued or considered that Parler itself might have been a honeypot, meaning it was a place that was set up to draw you in and in under the guise of trust, and a place that, you know, the idea tends to associate with like a woman FBI agent or something that, you know, sexually seduces you into getting it. In the same idea that this is a platform that is meant to look like the answer, the solution, and it's all the new things and it's great. But really, it was possibly meant to lull you into a safe position and then tell authorities what you're saying, what you're doing, what you're planning. Now, that is not necessarily proven, not even close. But they admit very clearly, and I'll go through this, to the fact that they were telling the FBI in the beginning of January, before this happened, what their users were saying. That gets into the point of whether you might think that's justified, right? And this isn't a trick question. It's certainly possible that people, and I'll get into what my take on this is when we get through it, that there might be some times when that should be necessary. If somebody's on the platform and somebody says, I'm going to murder this person, do you feel out there that that's necessary, that a platform has to say, hey, FBI, this is happening? Or do you think maybe they should just delete it, right? Where is the obligation for a platform when they think it's a valid threat versus just somebody joking around, right? These are questions that are up in the air. I'm not even sure exactly where I would pin this. I think it would have to be moment to moment. But I'm pretty sure you know my mindset, that I'm all pretty much always on the side of just delete the content. If you feel it violates some kind of a rule, do not go to the authorities because you don't know the content. I mean, on and on and on. I just do not believe in the idea of these kind of platforms opening a space and then watching and reporting back to the authorities. I do not believe that. If the FBI or the police want to be doing something like that, well, then start an account and do it yourself. I mean, is this the same idea as pretending like you're the idea that we're okay with people inside your community being informants for the police to tattle on you? You know, maybe it's legal, but are we okay with that? Right. You see, it's kind of a foggy discussion. So let's jump into this. Parler just flipped Big Tech's January 6th conspiracy theory on its head. Now, to the title today, this is the point, I find these two things to be sort of contradictory. Very clearly, Parler just demolished the mainstream media narrative. But maybe that was the point. I don't know. They did do that. But on top of that, they've admitted FBI is seemingly involved. Now, on Thursday, Parler sent a response to the House Committee on Oversight and Reforms request for documents regarding the riot. I'm reading directly from them. The company explained in a press release, in that response, Parler revealed that it had, quote, proactively developed an open line of communication with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the fall of 2020, and referred violent content and incitement from Parler's platform over 50 times before January 6th. Parler also warned the FBI about specific threats of violence being planned for the events at the Capitol on January 6th. Okay, so there's two very different things happening here, right? One is opening multiple lines of communication back in the fall of 2020, long before there was ever something that seemed to be developing, right? And then there's the idea of having specific threats of violence, which even then I want more definition. What did they say, and what do you think is a specific threat of violence? But that is what so on both cases, they were speaking to the FBI. Now, I don't know about you, but that screams to me that they were simply just relaying information to the FBI. I mean, you know, I could dive into that too far, but I want you guys to come to your own conclusions about this. Now, it says the letter details Parler's efforts, quote, to flag and remove unlawful speech. Now, this is an important point, unlawful speech. Now, you could argue that if you're saying, you know, that I'm going to murder this person, I'm going to rape that person, well, there's a law there that you would argue is potentially in conflict in regard to speech and then online and how this is going. Now, plenty of people have different opinions about that. And there's definitely a conversation to be had. But under Parler's argument, they're saying this was unlawful speech from its platform that was not protected by the First Amendment. But, you know, that's, you could argue whether everything is protected by the First Amendment. You know, this is where this gets debatable. But it says it also notes that of the 270 charging documents filed by the Department of Justice, 80% of the social media references involved big tech platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Get this. Only 5%. Oh, dang it. I just highlighted everything. Only 5% referred to Parler. Okay, so If only 5% referred to Parler in all of the 270 charging documents from the Department of Justice, why is Parler the focus? Right? If Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are the other 95% of the discussion, or I guess 80%, why aren't they the ones being removed? Why aren't they the ones being charged? I'm not arguing they should be. My point is this seems to be very focused in on Parler. Now, that could mean that they're the victims of an attack like they try to frame it here, and I think that's obviously part of it. Or it could be that this was the plan to set this up to even continue to use this as a honeypot for people that are now going, now we know that they're real. Well, the letter goes on to explain that Parler accumulated over 15 million users by January 2021. And this is where I would agree that Parler seems to make a lot of sense right here. And its app was the most downloaded app at the Apple Store and the Google US Play Store on January 8th. Okay, so 2 days after that whole thing happened, Parler is the most used app, the most downloaded app. What does that seem to suggest? What would that look like to Twitter and Facebook and Google? A competitor. A threat to their very clear control over the narrative and then also the massive profits that come along with selling all of your data and whatever else they do. That is a huge threat to their overall profit. So that is the most logical thing to think that they would do whatever they could to go after that. Now it says the company's press release connected the dots. Quote, big tech rivals Facebook and Twitter saw Parler, and again, this is the press release from Parler, as a viable threat and ganged up with Amazon and others to deplatform and destroy the company. Big tech has been effectively scapegoating Parler for the riots at the Capitol, which they clearly have. But Parler's revelations today show that the company acted responsibly to try and stop violence at the Capitol on January 6th. Along with the letter and the press release, Parler provided emails alerting the FBI to incitements to violence on Parler's social media platform. Let that load for a second. The company repeatedly warned its FBI contact about the potential for violence on January 6th. Its FBI contact. Like, again, this just seems to me to be some sort of a little bit more than just a concerned citizen from Parler reaching out to authorities to say, I think something's happening here. This seems like there was something there. That's just my opinion. Now, again, that doesn't have to mean that this is some kind of a completely controlled opposition kind of platform. Frankly, I don't necessarily feel that way. Just if I had to just pick one right now, but all of these things aligned together make me very concerned. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop using, you know me, I'm going to use damn near everything I can to get the content out there. And I'm just not going to be using it to, you know, relay personal information or so on. It's just the last thing I would do on any of these platforms. I mean, I don't use anything to relay anything other than, you know, triple encrypted how it is today. But it says in one email, Parler forwarded a message from a user who called, and this is where it gets interesting, in regard to the exact phrasing. And these are the examples they give as some of the worst, it seems. In one email, Parler forwarded a message from a user who called for, quote, an armed force of American patriots, 150,000, prepared to react to the congressional events on January 6th and follow what the Declaration of Independence has dictated to do in situations of absolute despotism. Now, here's what this, to me, feels like a trap. Because from Parler's perspective, or just the simple concept that like the overall agenda to make us look at that and go, okay, wait a minute, what are they actually saying? An armed force. Okay. Is it illegal to be armed? No, it's not. It's your constitutional right. Okay. Prepared to react to congressional events on January 6th. Now that's a very, you know, without the first or second part, that's a very milquetoast statement. React to what they're going to do. Then it says, follow what the Declaration of Independence has dictated to do in situations of absolute despotism. Now that, of course, could mean something violent, or if what they keep telling us it means could simply mean a transition of government. I mean, at the end of the day, to read into what you want to think it says, even though, let's be honest, it's clearly suggesting some kind of action. I'm actually quite baffled that this is something that they would argue is worth what happened. Right? I mean, and then back to the point, why it's alarming as a trap. What are they? I would argue the trap is for someone like me to look at this and go, well, either that's justified or they shouldn't be, you know, blah, 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 like lean into it. And my point is simply is saying is that does not seem to be a violation in any possible way. And in fact, if you actually believe in what the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution is saying, I believe that's what they meant, then you do have a right to do that. Okay, and you see where the trap is, because now suddenly by saying that, I'm a domestic terrorist. Because, oh my gosh, he's talking about overthrowing the government. No, not even close, because I'm constantly screaming about how violence is not the answer. But I can, as a logical human being, recognize that what they're discussing right there is in fact actually justified by the Constitution. You see, and this is where it gets really weird, because your government gives oath to this Constitution and then for the rest of their career continues to try to undermine and get rid of it. So they're only giving you this oath to be able to take that power. They would do everything in their power to undermine that Constitution because that's what gives you power. Not some piece of paper where the government decided what you could have, but the outlining of your inherent rights, God-given rights. Those rights existed before they were ever written down on a piece of paper. That was the point of inherent, God-given. So do you feel that that's justified? It's interesting, is it not? Either from FBI... I mean, well, FBI non-action, I guess, but from Parler, I guess, is the point. Now, it says one more up from the same account, more where this came from, concerned about Wednesday. Parler employee wrote that to the FBI. One more from this guy. More where that came from. Concerned about Wednesday. Clearly. Now, on the side of arguing for Parler, is it not abundantly clear that Parler went out of their way to try to show the FBI that something was about to happen? Obviously. So what does that mean? That means the mainstream media is either lying, making up a story, or blindly reporting what they were told to say. None of those things should surprise you, because Parler clearly did their due diligence ignoring for the moment how that would alarm you in regard to free speech and so on. They went to the FBI, according to the government, and did what they said they should have done. And the FBI did nothing. Remember, I was just talking about with someone earlier today. Remember, we know for a fact that the actual person in charge tried to call in more police the day before, the day before it happened, and then before it happened that day. I think it was three total times he tried to call in more police and more reinforcements, and Pelosi and everybody else just said, "Oh, well, you know, this or that, or no, or we'll run up the chain." Nothing ever happened. There is multiple actions along this whole process where I think they wanted this to happen, that this was trying to be coaxed into happening. And remember, as we know, as we're talking about, that there's these multiple examples of people like this that were involved. I don't know how you can possibly ignore that there was something going on here. But of course, that's no matter what, you could have signed affidavits from the president from Biden, and the people in this side of it would still act like it's conspiracy theory because it demolishes their entire stance. And today, what's more important than your political stance? Nothing, even facts and science, right? I believe what I believe because I'm right, right? That's it. There's nothing more. Contrary to big tech narrative, Parler did its due diligence, it says, and reported threats of violence to the FBI in advance of the Capitol riot. These actions, coupled with the fact that Parler only appeared in 5% of their charging documents, completely flips the big tech narrative on its head. It says the Capitol rioters did coordinate on Parler in part, but they also did so on other social media platforms. Parler was not negligent in its duty to remove incitement to violence, as Amazon, Apple, and Google claimed, right? So why did they claim that? It says, in fact, it removed the incitements and alerted the FBI. What more would you ask of them? Parler may not have been perfect in this regard, it says, but the company had been proactive before that whole thing happened. Sorry, I had this highlighted, you saw, but I messed myself up. Oh, and so it says there's no truth to the absurd conspiracy theories that have been put forth by big tech and its media allies to unfairly malign the company, which were referenced. Basically, there's also been the claim, oh, it says it right here, contrary to what has been reported, and this is so stupid, this goes back to the same point of, well, if you don't know what to do, blame Russia, right? Well, same thing here. It says Parler has never been engaged with collusion with Russians, and Parler has never offered Trump an ownership and interest in the company. This is the media. That's coming from mainstream media throwing out what are actually completely ridiculous claims with nothing to back them up, what they would call conspiracy theory. But I won't denigrate that term because it's not as dumb as they make it out to be. Now it says when Twitter targets conservatives, including President Trump, big tech shills tell us to build our own Twitter. Now, of course, we know Twitter targets much more than conservatives because I'm not a conservative. But as always, within the two-party paradigm, it blocks you from seeing the entire other side. Realize there's entire groups on Twitter right now screaming about how only leftist independent media is being censored. And there's entire groups going, there's only conservative independent media being censored. And somehow they both know that the other one's happening. They just ignore it because they don't care. They believe they're all shills over there. It's just naive. It's childish. We need to get past the two-party nonsense. I don't know. I dive into it all the time. It drives me crazy. But think about the point. They tell us to build our own Twitter. So we did. Then trillion-dollar monopolists Google and Apple, running their duopoly cartel, kicked Parler out of the apps. Then trillion-dollar monopolist Amazon kicked Parler off the internet. Like, this is so obvious. It says, now we know the truth, which is big tech used Parler as a scapegoat to destroy a startup company that is was a viable threat to their social media dominance. Now, sure, that seems to work quite well, but it could, as I pointed out, be simply that this is meant to bring them back into good graces after they were a very successful honeypot. In any case, I think it's very clear that people working this platform should basically just be concerned or watch what you're doing, because like on Twitter or anywhere else, they're watching. That's it. We know that. That's been shown. But it also shows us that the mainstream media will straight up lie to you, flat out, without any facts, without any information, mindlessly parrot the narrative they're supposed to say. I know we all know that, but hopefully there's one more person somewhere in here that goes, wow, that's crazy. Maybe they'll also reflect on COVID-19 when they make that point. Just a thought. Oh, and here is the actual, this is one of those things they were citing. Maybe we can scroll. Oh, that was pretty far down. Only one that seems to be popping up. That's weird. One of these things for Parler. Biden must be executed for treason. Now, here's a good example. Executed by any means necessary to save the country. Now, first of all, this seems to be a photo. So we should always consider that this is not real, especially since there's no engagement of anything, so on. Biden is walking target. But here's a good question to ask. If you saw this, what would you think? What would you do? Let's say you own a platform. What would you do? Biden must be executed. The president, the sitting president, and the guy is openly saying he should be executed. At the very least, you know that has to be removed. Period. If that's your rules, right? If you own a platform that says you can say whatever you want, well, then no, you don't. But if you have a platform that has these guidelines and you are following them, well, then it does. But the question is, should you be saying, hey, FBI, this guy said that, right? I'm sure it's completely mixed. It's a hard question. For some that are probably listening to this, they think you guys are ridiculous. But you see, people that will err on the side of freedom tend to accept a level of danger. You see, people who err on the side of government control will always tend to accept more control. Interesting the way that goes. But we see this happening after all of this House chamber getting Kevlar reinforced bulletproof doors, because yeah, that's not going away. They're going to lock down and control. It's now the visual of the dystopian authoritarian state that we've always really had. Now they're just using you to do it. They're afraid of you, America. You are the threat. But don't worry, it's only right now. It's only until next week. It's only 2 weeks to flatten the curve. It's all going to go away, right? Just continue. But going back to the experimentation, because I kind of believe this was part of that too. This feels like an experiment. We are being tested, seeing how we respond, and hopefully radicalizing people to use to push in the agenda of inverting their focus, right? On us. We are the threat, even though that's always really been the point, even the Patriot Act. We're going to go after those bad guys, except we need to look at you because you might be one, right? That's basically how it happened. But thinking about the experimentation, this is an interesting point. And this brings us into the idea of, you know, COVID and the Great Reset and the technological aspect of this. This is something that I've been talking about for a really long time, just casually on Twitter, right? Just sharing these things. Let me make sure. Okay, good. Just casually sharing these things about Tesla specifically, because it's just been so, it makes me laugh how it seems like for a while there, it was like every other day there was a crash Tesla. Oh, look at another Tesla. And nobody seemed to care. They weren't stopping them from being sold. They weren't stopping them from being driven that way. It's like nobody. And I'm just going, how is it even possible? I mean, you could have a Toyota or a Ford that would crash that much and they would recall the whole damn line. But here are Teslas crashing left and right using driverless technology, and nobody seemed to care until now. I see this and suddenly I feel like it clicks into place, at least possibly. As I said, and this is actually a really interesting. Now, there's a couple of things in here that seem a little hyperbolic, maybe towards the end, you know, yeah, but in any case, or not, maybe not hyperbolic, but more so subjective or opinion, but doesn't mean it's wrong. Understand. But nonetheless, this is actually really well done. 5-part video going over how this is basically a scam and how people have been crashing and the people that are testing this are going, this doesn't work at all. And it's still happening. So as I said, and I won't show this, but I recommend you just watch it for yourself because it's apparently being deleted left and right. I said, I've been pointing this out for years, I highly recommend you watch parts 1 and 6 for yourself, 1 through 6 yourself. How is this even being allowed that these are crashing and it just keeps going? I would say because we're all being tested on, right? And have been for some time. Consider how this all relates to the Internet of Things, smart cities, the Great Reset agenda. So we're testing how people respond to this, how it adds to how people act around it, right? how this can actually work in real city settings. Like, this may have been the legitimate testing to begin. This may have been the first or one of the first testing in regard to smart cities, Internet of Things, the Great Reset. I mean, that's exactly what this is. That's what we're going toward. So I just find it very telling. I mean, in any other circumstance, they would have put a stop to this immediately. But this was just allowed to continue. I think it was a test. Just my take. And speaking of that, an entire reset of the financial system, because that's not because COVID? No, just because. But it's sort of COVID, right? It's happening because we have an opportunity, right? That's all this. This is what we said would happen. How many of these things need to continue to happen before these people that keep screaming conspiracy theory realize how dumb they sound? Financial Times, March 18th, 2021. Time for a great reset of the financial system. I mean, this isn't even a play on words. They're literally talking about the same thing. A 30-year debt super cycle that has fueled inequality illustrates the need for a new regime. A regime? Like, you realize they use that as a derogatory term about foreign governments, and now they're telling you they're going to build a financial regime for you. It's like they want us to know that they're building some kind of an authoritarian structure. This is crazy. But here's what's interesting. In regard to the concept of the 30-year debt cycle, super cycle, frankly, I disagree with that. I think this is not some natural thing. This is what they have led to pass. But I also find it very telling that possibly, or at least just, how about this? Just consider the possibility that this specific 30-year cycle was possibly in line or planned with this exact moment in mind. This could have been planned all the way out to the idea that once this came about, it would be time to reset this financial system right in line with what they thought would be the time they would have to change everything, maybe alter our evolution with nanotechnology and all the other things they keep saying we're 20 years out. Possible. Now think about that as we go through it, and you'll see why what I mean when I say that. On average, international monetary systems last about 35 to 40 years before the tensions they create become too great and a new system is required. Now, honestly, any fiat system, for the most part, fiat cash systems tend to fail. Not always tend to fail, though, you know, especially when they're based on nothing like the US dollar. But the way they make that sound is almost like it's guaranteed, but that's not necessarily the case. Now, it says prior to the First World War, major economies existed on a hard gold standard. Now, that wouldn't have gone away, especially if we kept it, but it says intra-wars, most economies returned to a semi-hard gold standard. At the end of the Second World War, a new international system was designed, the Bretton Woods Order, with the dollar tied to gold and other key currencies tied to the dollar. Now, I would argue gold standard makes the most sense in regard to just hard gold. But even here, we have something tied to a tangible real world asset. Now, it says when that broke down, which, again, not what happened. When it broke down at the start of the 1970s, the world moved on to the fiat system. No, that was a choice. It didn't break down. It was about control. It was about more control over the financial system and about where the world that we built that's creating the 30-year debt cycle, right? That wouldn't have happened with that scenario, or at least more so with the hard gold scenario. But it says the world moved on to a fiat system where the dollar was not backed by a commodity and was therefore not anchored. This system has now reached the end of its usefulness. Okay, so in the 70s, when they decided to change to the fiat system, that puts you in line to have this debt super cycle end right now. So my question would be, was that a choice to try to plan this along the same time frame of when they might have known they were going to create some kind of a bigger change? Now, it might seem crazy to you to think they could think that far ahead. In most cases, most of these people don't. But for select groupings of unelected power structure, that is all they do. And that's why they plan these converging technology documents and say in 20 years, we're going to change everything with nanotechnology. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. So consider that. Now it says with a new U.S. administration and the end of the COVID battle in sight with the vaccination rollout underway, because of course that's not a lie at all, now is a good time for the major economies of the West and ideally the world to sit down and devise a new international monetary order. Do you get that? So because COVID's about to, well, first of all, the end of COVID battle in sight, even if that's it was ever really what was happening, is only happening because of natural changes here. The where you have less than a third of this country even vaccinated, we right now are seeing, I mean, this has nothing to do, and I actually have a point that I'm going to show you about that when I get to in a minute, in regard to this naturally happening, and yet they're still desperately trying to take credit for it, which is what we said also, all the conspiracy theorists, well before this happened. But I find it funny, with the end in sight, with the vaccination rollout underway, always trying to take credit for that, saying that's why this is happening. No, it's not. And it's fundamentally, you could prove it based on when it happened and when the times came in, when vaccines were rolled out. It's obvious, but they're going to try. But of course, the point is, it's a good time. Well, because COVID and because we're finally getting out of this horrible thing that gave us the opportunity to change everything. But yes, not just, you know, decide what's best for Americans. No, no, no. But the world and a new international monetary order. You mean like a global currency? Yes. Oh, crazy. You mean like that thing that conspiracy theorists were laughed away for saying like a month ago? Yes, exactly that. Isn't that funny? But of course, remember, this isn't about COVID. This is just, we're just deciding that, well, it's about to happen anyway. 30-year debt cycle. Might as well change the whole thing, right? Or how about we don't change to a new system that puts more power at the top of people when we don't own anything and never, you're never been happier, right? That's what they're talking about. Now it says, as part of that, there should be widespread debt cancellation, which I found very interesting. Now, remind me, who has the most debt in regard to the countries? Oh, that's right, the U.S. government, especially the government debt that held by central banks. All right. So when you owe $20 trillion in debt, you know, of course, let's just cancel it out. We estimate that amounts to approximately $25 trillion of government debt in the major regions of the global economy. So if that can just be, you know, canceled out, it's meaningless. But of course, right now, the entire system is run on debt, right? Our system is actual, the current debt is our actual currency in regard to our governments for the most part. But doing this is about keeping that, you know, debt slavery ongoing until they no longer need it. And then just washing the board and making it work for them as you go. You see, it just shows you the willingness, the ability to just, I mean, if Americans have been screaming about some kind of financial change for a long time, and they never cared to do it until it was obviously in their best interest, not the country, not Americans, but specifically the unelected power structure and specifically the very powerful people in our government. High ownership of government debt High ownership of government debt in that environment by parts of the financial system, such as banks and insurers, could inflict significant losses. In that case, recapitalization of parts of the financial system should be included as part of the establishment of the new international monetary order. Interesting. In that case, recapitalization, right? So what's ultimately happening right now with your government, with all these fake stimulus bills where they say they're giving you money and then they give it to everybody else? That's happened, what, 4 times now? I mean, we really must be the dumbest people. I mean, how in the world have we allowed that to happen? It's because people keep thinking we have no choice. 4 times, trillions of dollars flying out of your pocket under the guise of helping you, which doesn't really make sense when you think about it, that they're taking your tax dollars to give you a little bit, to give you less back. It makes no sense at all. But what's really happening as they give it to foreign countries and give it to big companies in this country, or give it to health insurance and different things after they claim that's for you? Does that sound like maybe exactly what they're talking about? The ownership of government debt and the environment by parts of our financial system, such as banks and insurers, could inflict significant losses. Well, yeah. So what do we need to do? Well, they make fake stimulus bills and pay them out so we can, as put it, recapitalization of parts of the financial system should be included. Well, maybe that's happening now. Interesting. Secondly, policymakers should negotiate some form of anchor, whether it's tying each other's currencies together, tying them to a central electronic currency, or maybe electronic special drawing rights, the international reserve asset created by the IMF. Because we're all crazy conspiracy. It's just so, I can't get past how funny it is that this is like, there are people that wrote like literal blog posts or articles or whatever, like literally what this says. And this was like the most crazy, like New World Order, tinfoil hat madness. Just like Dan Rancourt said about the conspiracy or the vaccine passports. Like last month's crazy conspiracy is this week's ridiculous reality. It's just like, it's nuts. And every time they keep acting like we're still crazy, even though we continue to be showing, and I'm not talking about everyone. I'm talking about those of us that they're calling conspiracy theorists while we're doing objective research and keeping informing you. But an electronic currency. Right? Why don't we, I don't know, God forbid, tie it to gold again, right? No, can't do that because that doesn't give them the control that they seek, right? That's what this is. It's It's not better for you. It's better for them. Now get this. I love at the bottom. Okay. Note that they don't capitalize this, right? So we're just using the term. We don't mean to imply the great reset. We just mean a great reset of the financial system, except that they quietly capitalize it at the end, right? Because we're not connected to the great reset or anything. But yes, we want to look, if you capitalize that, that's what they mean. They're talking about the great reset, and they want a great reset offers, therefore, opportunity to restore some semblance of economic fairness in Western and other economies. Fairness? I mean, do you realize the only reason that anything's unfair in regard to the government is abusing your everything? I mean, to argue that we're going to give them more power and that will create fairness is ridiculous. That's like saying to give more power to the U.S. military because it will create peace. It's stupid. It's the absolute opposite of what we're talking about. But all it is great. It's the great reset in every possible way, being driven in from different positions to pretend like it's best for you. And here's what's happening after the last stimulus, right? Americans' income collapsed by the most on record in February. Sure worked out well. Thanks, Biden. And I said, sure glad all that stimulus money, quote, saved America, as the mainstream media ridiculously put it. Maybe next time, don't send the vast majority of the stimulus to people other than Americans in need. You know, just a thought. Clearly, this was a scam. This was a fake spending bill or fake stimulus bill that was really a spending bill where they just wanted to pretend they were going to help you. So you went along with it and then just spent money on things that, you know, maybe was taking care of projects that were involved with the Great Reset or whatever else we want to talk about. At the end of the day, wasn't helping you. But let's try it again, right? Let's see if they do it next time. That's the two-party illusion hysteria psychosis that will continue this forward if we don't wake up to that reality. Now, going over to, I guess, vaccines sort of, but more so the idea of just misinformation around this idea coming from Fauci specifically, this is one that I really think is important to talk about. Now, we talked about the last one. Actually, we talked about a few of these. Rand Paul calling him out. I forget. There was Rand Paul. I can't remember the other guy, but basically we've seen Fauci continue to get lambasted from all sorts of experts and professionals and medical doctors and PhDs. And it's just gospel. It is a cult, it seems. Now, this article entitled Fauci Needs to Put Up or Shut Up: America's Doctor Dismantled in Scathing Op-Ed. Now, this actually has parts that I've already, was this the one? Yeah, there's parts that I've read this before, but they bring it back up to make their point, and I'm glad they did because it is definitely relevant. Now, this reads, doubts about the omnipotent ocularness of America's doctor are starting to spread, and not just among extreme right Nazi anti-vax COVID deniers. They're making a joke, right? That constitutes anyone who ever raises any doubts about any aspect of Biden Fauci public health policy, they say. But you see where that already went wrong? All right, this is the typical two-party nonsense. Is it Biden's Fauci policy? No, it's the same exact policy. And Fauci did the same exact thing under Trump. So can we just please, for God's sakes, put aside the ridiculous idea that Biden is any different than Trump at the end of the day? Yes, they say different things. And yes, they probably have very different beliefs. But what the government is accomplishing and where it leads in regard to COVID-19, the technocratic rise, the great reset in your life mean very little. It is the same agenda. Trump is still promoting Operation Warp Speed. But going forward, as Scott Atlas recently noted, it has also exposed profound issues in America that now threaten the very principles of freedom and order that we Americans often take for granted. Now, let me see here. I have something I want to play real quick. I just need to grab something really quickly. So let me play this Fauci clip in regard to this one.
But I do just want to make sure that I share some caution on this because we just don't know the long-term side effects of basically modifying people's DNA and RNA.
DNA is inherent in your own nucleus cell.
We just don't know the long-term side effects of basically modifying people.
That was actually the wrong clip, to be honest, but I had to grab something really quickly or take care of something. But in any case, it actually is interesting because that's the one where Zuckerberg is pointing out exactly what we keep saying about the experimental or the DNA thing. But the Fauci comes in later in that clip. But in any case, let's get back to the point. So it says, First, and this is in regard to the meet, Scott Atlas speaking on this. First, I have been shocked. And this actually is really crazy coming from, I mean, really anybody, but this guy's life has been destroyed. Why? Because he dared to tell you what he really thought. And that's actually one of the points they make in this article. He says, first, I have been shocked at the enormous power of the government to unilaterally decree to simply close businesses and schools by edict, restrict personal movement, mandate behavior, and eliminate our most basic freedoms without any end and little accountability. Second, I remain surprised at the acceptance by the American people of draconian rules, restrictions, and unprecedented mandates, even those that are arbitrary, destructive, and wholly unscientific, which is why I wanted to reference this again, just in case you haven't seen it, in case we have new people here to read. A great article by Derek Brose, The Rise of Authoritarianism, From Parasite Stress Theory to Lockstep, right? And this, he talks about lockstep specifically, but also gets into what is parasite stress theory. Now, if you haven't heard of this before, this is there's multiple studies that have proven that if a government wanted to create an authoritarian state, the most effective way to make people completely acquiesce to demands, to complete, you know, just to become passive and take direction, and then also snitch on their neighbors and tell on people that are doing the wrong things. You know what they would do? The scientific studies found, create a pandemic. And guess what the studies found? It doesn't even have to be real. The threat of a pandemic, real or not, creates a situation that is completely conducive to creating an authoritarian government. And in fact, has shown to do that in places where they have continual show, you know, different viruses popping up. And the fact is, and this is what they're saying specifically around any government. As it says, according to the parasite stress hypothesis, authoritarian governments are more likely to emerge in regions characterized by high prevalence of disease-causing pathogens. They define authoritarian governments as highly concentrated power structures that repress dissent and emphasize submission to authority, social conformity, and hostile towards outgroups. Now it says, and by the way, over here, parasite is used to refer to any pathogenic organism, including bacteria or viruses. But it says, due to the invisible nature of disease-causing parasites, attempts to control the spread of a disease, quote, historically depends substantially on adherence to ritualized behavioral practices that reduced infection risk. The researchers also found that society tends to promote a collectivist worldview, favoring obedience and conformity from the population. It's just incredible. Unfortunately, according to a parasite stress theory, humanity is prone to accepting violent behavior from governments during pandemics. They know this stuff, guys. Multiple studies have found this. Now, it says in this study, it notes the threat of exposure to a pathogen need not even be realistic for it to create a desire for conformity and obedience to authority. The reality that they know this has to be taken into consideration, which is why Scott is just, again, he's surprised by the acceptance by the American people of these things. But that explains it. And your government knew about that. It says this crisis has also exposed what we have all known existed, but we have tolerated for years. And this is one I want all of us to reflect on, because we have, every one of us, tolerated for years the overt bias of the media, the lack of diverse viewpoints on campuses, the absence of neutrality in big tech controlling social media, and now more visibly than ever, the intrusion of politics into science. Ultimately, the freedom to seek and state the truth is at risk in the United States. I mean, thank God there are people that are actually recognizing this and courageous enough to say it, like Scott Jensen, right? I mean, this is the point. And this is why we can't, as people continue to come out with this stuff, recognize that they're aware that they will have their lives destroyed and they're willing to put their entire career on the line to give you the truth. Now, sure, they could be wrong, but realize that that is what real heroes look like. Someone who is willing to take the consequences to do what they think is right. Not just say what is easy to say today and say, oh, well, masks work, so I'm a good person, right? Is that what you believe? Or are you saying that because it's easy? In fact, because the science and the facts say otherwise. Frustrating. Now it says, and as Mike Shedlock reports, Dr. Anthony Fauci took questions from U.S. senators in Congress a few days ago. He was successful at not answering much of anything. And this is just really crazy. Take a look at this.
Madam Chair.
Oh, you know what? That was pretty low. Let me see if I downloaded that. Nope, but let me grab it real quick.
Chair, leadership is what America is now looking for. They're looking for a strong, consistent, honest voice from the NIH, from the CDC, the FDA, and from the White House. And frankly, Dr. Fauci, a nation is turning its lonely eyes to you for leadership. Let's talk about schools for a second. I think you all know and agree with me, our schools are, our youth are in a mental health crisis. Our youth are suffering from increased instances of suicide, substance abuse, overdoses, depression.
Okay, I know it's low. I'm just grabbing the video. Here's the, we can watch the video. Let's see. Here we go.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and from the White House. And frankly, Dr. Fauci, a nation is turning its lonely eyes to you for leadership. Let's talk about schools for a second. I think you all know and agree with me, our schools are, our youth are in a mental health crisis. Our youth are suffering from increased instances of suicide, substance abuse, overdoses, depression, a true epidemic. And this was very predictable for all of us from the healthcare field, that when we close down schools without the social interaction, we'd see increased mental health crisis. Totally predictable. Let's talk about the science of viruses for just a second. As a private practice OBGYN for 25 years, I would tell you that viruses are predictably unpredictable, that how they impact a non-pregnant versus a pregnant woman certainly is different.
Now, just take a look at the mask tracker, right? I mean, I don't know how many times we need to see this. It's just so frustrating. Mask states versus no mask states. Basically not. I mean, the reality is you will see spikes because there are differences. But at the end of the day, if you're not seeing a difference, what is the point? Right? This is when they say trust the science, but they don't have it to back it up.
And what I feel like when I try to listen very hard to you all is that this...
Yes, William, I know. That was the point. It's as high as it goes. I tried to... That's just turn up your volume because that's as high as it goes with where it is right here.
The little science we do have is being presented as dogma, as gospel.
Yep.
We know it's not. It's anecdotal at best. All I've heard so far today is basically anecdotal experiences. When it comes to schools, we need to hear a stronger voice from you all, from leadership. We need to hear a stronger voice, not a wishy-washy voice. And Dr. Fauci, I would ask you, do you agree with me that the benefits outweigh the risk of getting children back in school? Will you tell America we need to get our kids back to school?
I have said that repetitively, as you know.
So it looks like I'm getting comments that it's just too low for a lot of people. I'm not sure why. It's embedded, so it should be playing hot. But the point is he doesn't answer. He asks, would you say yes or no? And he goes off for this whole time and says something that's not the answer.
Hearings, I think the chair...
into schools across America.
Well, I mean, if you listen to the CDC's recommendations, that's exactly what they're saying.
Again, doesn't answer it. Again, ask for yes or no. Again, doesn't answer.
They're talking about the benefits versus the risk.
So he's saying, do you think it's better? Like, basically saying, is it better to open these back up or not? Is it, do the benefits outweigh the risks? Or the risks? And he won't answer the question over and over.
And as you know, their guidelines are trying to get people to follow guidelines that will get the children back to school with the minimum risk.
I was hoping a yes or no answer, but I'll move on to mask. One mask, two masks, oh me, oh my. You know, President Biden recently said that we should all wear masks until everyone is vaccinated. That's probably the worst thing that could have been said for compliance. So many people have said, why would I go get a vaccine when the president says we have to keep wearing masks until everyone's vaccinated? We Americans feel like the goal line keeps moving. And I understand your fear of different variants and all those different things going on here. But where is the science that clearly shows wearing masks is helpful after you've had the vaccines?
And well, see, this is what they keep doing. And I actually think it's very smart if that's what they're doing, like Rand Paul, that going after the point that they're weak about, right? That if, you know, cause my point is wearing them at all, because that's what the science actually supports, that they do not have any significant reduction in transmission. That's what the science says, all the random controlled trials, as well as the fact I'll show you another medical doctor today that says that on the record that we've never, that was never the thing before COVID-19. And they all know that, they're just not telling you that. Right. But in this case, that they go after the idea that, well, if you're already vaccinated, why do you need the mask? Is there any evidence to suggest that that's actually? And the point is they don't have it. So how are they saying trust the science? And that's what these people are pointing out. It's ridiculously hypocritical. And that's what I keep saying. They're not, they don't actually want you to trust the science. They want you to trust them, assuming that they have the science. What you should really do is literally look at the science, and you'd quickly realize that they're not actually pointing to the science. That's what these people keep trying to point out. And they keep using the variants as fear-mongering points to just simply say, well, it might be dangerous, but at what point did we ever lock worlds down, lock people down and put people, we've never done this before anyway, but the idea that we're going to create entire policy based on something we don't know, that the hypothetical possible threat of something that we've never proven is enough to destroy your lives, completely double teen suicide, to destroy your businesses, it's ridiculous. But that's where we are now. We're long past the lie about 3.6% from the Imperial College. We're long past the lie of asymptomatic transmission. We're long past the lie of all these things. Now all we're doing is pointing to variants that may happen. That's why Brisbane gets one new case and they show we're shutting everything down again, because it's just an excuse. Because the reality is, based on their information, you're not in danger. That's their information. But I'm crazy for saying that based on their data.
For the sake of time, I need to move on. But all I've heard the question asked already, and I've heard anecdotal evidence. But I would love to have you all send me the study, or if you've had the virus. And we all want to know, you know, where is the goal line? When can we stop moving masks? I want to talk about the border, though. That's what I'm really concerned about. I just visited the border, my third trip there. It's certainly a humanitarian crisis, and I'm sure anyone that's been down there would agree with me that it's a national security crisis, but I want to talk about the healthcare crisis going on there. When I went down with a group of physicians 3 years ago or so, I was concerned about just the doctors and nurses being overwhelmed. I was concerned about tuberculosis, hepatitis, scabies, sexually transmitted diseases, and other communicable diseases. But now, based upon what we know, the incidence of COVID is 5 to 25% of the people coming across the border. And then what I see.
So they're telling us it's 25% of people coming across the border that are infected with COVID. I don't know why we would trust that, but just going off their narrative, listen to the point he made.
Is they take a group of folks, 50 to 60 people, they put them on one bus, then they do a couple of exams, and they all put them in some type of a dorm setting. So if they all didn't have the virus, they soon will. And then we let them go out into the public. That just seems hypocritical. You know, the application that you're talking about for when we can let ships come to Alaska, and the concern about variants from South Africa, it seems hypocritical.
Right. I mean, really acknowledge the point he's making there. So we're freaking out about ships docking in Alaska, or worrying about hypothetical variants from South America and how it's going to come in. And we're telling you, you can't go see your family. You can't have a barbecue. You can't hug your neighbor. You can't hug your mom. But we're going to let that's irrelevant really in this point. We're going to let anybody coming in from another country process through and just let them out into the country while you're not allowing us to actually engage with our own families. I mean, it's like he just said, they're put in buses and they're jammed in these locations. And then, I mean, just, this is ridiculous. And this should in no way be even, don't even consider this in regard to how you feel about immigration or any of that, because that's not the point. The point is that your government is telling you, left or right, that you can't do certain things. You can't go have a barbecue. You can't go to the bar, but these people can come right through, even telling us that 25% are infected with COVID, and we'll just let them walk right into the country. This is where you find the politics playing a more important role than actual science or actually anything. This is politics trumping anything else. And that's what's funny, because that's exactly what this lady shows us at the end.
To me, while I respect completely where you're coming from, it seems like it's a double standard. Dr. Fauci, are you comfortable with what we're doing on the border from an ID standpoint?
I believe that means infectious disease. And he's saying, are you comfortable with what we're doing on the border?
The reason I would have to hedge on that.
Because he doesn't answer. The reason I have to hedge is because I don't really know all the details. Oh, cool. I'm so glad that the head of the NIA doesn't know all the details about something that we just discussed is spreading 25% of COVID-19. That's their narrative, understand? But you realize how dumb it is for him to say that? That means he's afraid to answer for political reasons.
Because I'm not really very deeply familiar with the details of what's going on at the border. And that's perfectly honest with you, Dr. Marshall. I really am not familiar enough with the situation at the border to be able to make a comment. If I was, I would.
Whose job is it to know that?
Right. Good question then. Okay. Whose job is it then?
I can chime in and say that I am aware that at CBP sites that there's overcrowding and that we need to, from an infectious disease standpoint, from a COVID standpoint, we need to de-densify what is happening at CBP. We have been working closely with ORR as our children leave CBP and move to the ORR sites to work towards getting them screened and tested, which is why they have, you know what percent positivity they have there. Those ORR sites are much improved compared to the CBP sites with regard to how those children are cared for, who is caring for them, and we are providing technical guidance on those ORR sites to work to make sure that they are as safe as possible using mitigation strategies at their
Do you see
the- Okay, so she didn't answer the question, right? This is what's so it's like banging your head at a brick wall, right? We just saw Levine get sworn in regardless of how she would refuse to answer questions. They don't care. This is all political theater, in my opinion, anyway, guys. But the fact that she pointedly is saying, it's a hypocritical, it's a double standard to let them in this way and not do it, but restrict Americans in this regard. And she just goes, we're doing what we can to keep it safe and blah, blah, blah.
The hypocrisy in what we're doing to America. We're saying that I can't have a barbecue with my entire family on the July 4th. I can't have Easter service worship together. But we're going to let people come across the border in mass numbers and just release them into, does that not seem hypocritical?
I think there are two different situations that we have to handle. We have to handle in two different ways. And we're-
okay, so is it hypocritical? Well, there are two different situations in two different ways. Well, you can easily say that as a lame sidestep, but are we talking about people who are potentially infected, who could potentially get other people sick? Yes. I'm not saying I believe in any of that. What I'm saying is that is what we're talking about in regard to their narrative. So they're not different situations. One is a politically charged situation. Well, both are really, but she is desperately afraid to in any way suggest what they're doing over there is wrong or bad or should be done differently, because that will, then she will be consumed by the aggressive left right now, who are going to freak out that anybody is challenging Biden. And they know that. And that's disgusting. So even these people that are supposed to be watching out for your health, even though we know that's not what these, you know, regulatory agencies are really doing at all, she's willing to put politics ahead of you. Always. Makes me sick. But that's what these people are. Now, what's even more frustrating is as we talk about this. I'm going back to this, actually, before I go forward. Add this back up real quick. So back to this article.
And I have this question.
Does anybody in this restaurant think it's a good...
That wasn't supposed to play yet. Oh, a little spoiler alert. You're going to see that in a second. I'm sure somebody just sent that to me. You might not know what it is, and you're going to want to see that. But going forward, after playing that video... Now, this is from... So we're going back to the article talking about, now this is what we're talking about in regard to herd immunity, right? So what we're seeing here, it says in February, Johns Hopkins professor, Dr. Marty McCarry dared to pen in an op-ed in Wall Street Journal saying that we will have herd immunity by April, not from the vaccines. And as previously noted, some awkward facts and science on herd immunity were recently been dropped by none other than Fraud Strats Tom Lee. It says cumulatively and slowly, the U.S. is seeing more states reach a combined level of vaccinations plus infections approach what is seen in herd immunity. So far, South Dakota, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Arizona, Oklahoma, Utah, and Tennessee are the nearest. Now it says the math appears to fit with Marquez's arguments for why the recent plunge in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths is not policy related, no matter how much the politicians and their media lackeys push that narrative. Quote, the consistent and rapid decline in daily cases since January 8th can be explained, funny how it's January 8th of all places, remember that, that's not a joke, can be explained only by natural immunity. That's it. Behavior didn't suddenly improve over the holidays. Americans traveled more over Christmas than they had since March. Vaccines also don't explain the steep decline in January. Vaccination rates were low and they would take weeks to kick in. This is not what they're telling you it is. This either shows that they planned their manipulations of the PCR test and changing of definitions a little too disjointedly and it didn't work for them, or this was actually just natural immunity to what we're dealing with. In any case, it's not the truth what they're trying to tell you. Now it says, quote, experts should level with the public about the good news. This is what I've read to you in the past. It says, Oh, and she says, exclaimed the person we're talking about, Markay. And this data on eminent herd immunity puts more pressure on Fauci and Biden to come clean, despite their variant fear-mongering and no return to normal until Christmas or beyond predictions. I mean, that is, think about that. You know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And the goalpost moving is just so obscene. We're, you know, next month or next term, next holiday. Now we're already in the new year and we're talking about Christmas. I don't know how anybody has allowed this to continue who actually believes these things. That just shows you how desperately they're willing to just blindly trust authority. That's it, because they're fearful. But it says, but of course, this reality may never be allowed in the national narrative. As you previously concluded, and this is the part I read for you before, some medical experts, this is a PhD we're talking about, some medical experts privately agreed with my prediction that there may be very little COVID-19 by April, but suggested that I not talk about it publicly, talk about herd immunity publicly, because people might become complacent and fail to take precautions or might decline the vaccine. So we should hide the truth about where we really are because it might create vaccine hesitancy. That's exactly what I've been saying from the beginning. And that truth is what it's good news that we're not in danger, that it is going away. But no, they don't want you to know that. It says, but scientists shouldn't try to manipulate the public by hiding the truth. As we encourage everyone to get a vaccine, we also need to reopen schools and society to limit the damage of closures and prolonged isolation. Contingency planning for an open economy by April can deliver hope to those in despair and to those who have been made large personal sacrifices. You mean like everybody, but that's not going to happen though. Anthony, this is from Marty continues saying, Anthony Fauci has been saying that the country needs to vaccinate 70% to 85% of its population to reach herd immunity from COVID-19. But he inexplicably ignores natural immunity. If you account for previous infections, herd immunity is likely close at hand. And that's what this was showing us, is that in these locations, they're already looking at 69, 68, 62, but they don't want to include immunity from natural exposure. Why? There's something going on. That's why. As he says here, undercounting or removing the many Americans with natural immunity from any tally of herd immunity is a scientific error by omission. Of course, you can call it an error. I would say it's a lie. When people wonder why President Biden talks about limiting 4th of July gatherings, it's because his most prominent medical advisor has dismissed the contribution of natural immunity, artificially extending the timeline. Marty goes on to say, natural immunity is real and shouldn't be ignored. Now, this is what we're continually telling you. It says, Dr. Fauci has said that we don't have a good data on natural immunity. That's what Dr. Fauci is saying. This is largely because his own National Institute of Health has done little to answer this or other important clinical questions. The NIH and the CDC, which together receive more than $40 billion a year from taxpayers, should have focused on answering the most basic COVID-19 clinical questions that affect Americans. He says, if we say we're going to follow the science, then we need to be willing to consider all the data. Right, Dr. Fauci? But here's the problem, though. Dr. Fauci says we don't have good data on natural immunity. Okay, well, then why did the NIH in January 26 state that we do have that data? Lasting immunity found after recovery from COVID-19. This is on the NIH website. Very clearly states that after people recover from infection with the virus, the immune system retains a memory of it. Now, they go on to point out in regard to this specifically. Well, and I always like to point out that they go, oh, this gives us hope that the vaccine will do the same. I don't even know why that makes sense. The point is that they know this has lasting immunity from the natural engagement with this, but they don't want you to know that. And they lie and say, we don't have any data on it. Sort of like when they put out the claim that this is experimental on the NIH website, and then people scream, it's not experimental. We are choosing to ignore the reality, even on their own website. That means that you haven't even taken the time to check what they say on their website. You just listen to what they say it says on their website. That's crazy. So we have natural immunity, and they sell us that, but they're ignoring that. Why? Because there's a bigger agenda at play. And as I point out, in regard to Israel more than once, this is the article from USA Today where they fact check Israel launching green pass for citizens vaccinated against COVID-19. Fact check this very real and public display of something that's happening. Is it true? Tell me, USA Today. Well, of course, the point is they say, yes, it is true, but we didn't need your very long, ridiculous article about something that's patently obvious. But that's what people need today. They're relying on others to tell them what's happening. But here's what they have to say about the green pass in Israel. People who have recovered from the virus, indicating acquired immunity, as the NIH says it does happen and is lasting, but have not been vaccinated are not eligible. Why would you exclude natural immunity, especially since it lasts longer? Because it's not about immunity. It is about the vaccine. There's much more happening here. And if Israel's doing it, that's pretty good indication that's what's coming our way as well. And that's why we're seeing this. Veterans, families, already, we're talking, this is one day ago this was published. And as they say right here, we haven't even finished the other doses yet. But guess what? Veterans, families may need to get a COVID booster shot later this year. Why? Because it's not working. It's not even working the way that they said it was supposed to work, right? So they're already slowly dripping out the fact that these vaccines aren't even as effective as they thought they were lying about, right? This is crazy. And on top of that, there's a thousand other reasons why you shouldn't, if it's not stopping transmission, if you can still catch it, if you still have to wear a mask, if you still have to social distance, this doesn't make sense. Now, if you have to get a booster shot in the same year and you get lasting immunity from the natural, it just doesn't make any sense. This is why they're desperately trying to create narratives to keep you scared, to get you to take this very experimental thing that hasn't been tested properly and is still unapproved. But here is Boris Johnson telling you the data still supports lifting COVID-19 restrictions, insisting Boris Johnson. Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. This is I am continuing to see this weirdly change into how they're now suddenly claiming that we are going back. But not completely, though, because they'll never do that. They're going to keep the whole thing so they can scream about a variant next week and keep you in control. But the point is, what's the data that supports lifting the restrictions? And what point did that data change? Are you going to show us that data? Or is there no data? Or did you realize that you've been wrong this whole time? Whatever the answer is, we have a right to know, right? I mean, look, in Tennessee right now, they just opened Nashville. They completely reopened. That's a good thing. And it's a good thing regardless. But these are the people that put you here. So they don't get praise for removing the unjust illegal thing they put on you. The point is, if they're doing this, if they're removing these mandates, we need to demand what changed, what that shows us, or that you realize you're wrong. And if that's the case, you need to be held accountable for the actions that destroyed our lives. You see, they're hoping we just skip right past that and go, yay, they gave us back something they were never allowed to take in the first place. We need to demand this. Because if data did change, what changed it? Did it naturally happen? And that does that then retroactively show us that all these other things aren't working or shouldn't be used? Right? I mean, there's all these questions. At the end of the day, I believe this is just a simple planned effort to roll this down because they see that they're losing control. There's no data. There's no difference because right now people are screaming about variants right over here. People are screaming about variants in the UK. So based on his logic from like a month ago, they shouldn't be doing this. But it's not about logic or data. It's about the fact that they already see that they need to go back to giving us something because people are about to tear them down. There is no data. There never was. Not like you think. But massive backlash, and this is my point, to Boris Johnson's no jab, no pub proposal. So this is the point. People are flipping out right now, especially in the UK. So he's continuing to let you think that things will maybe go back, but realize that they're just still keeping you inside of this digital prison of the UK or of the US and allowing you to think that slowly giving you back things they weren't allowed to take is somehow going back to normal. But all this no pub or no jab, no pub, no, this is the economic or societal exclusion that all the blue check Twitter's guys a year or so crazy. And here we are. Now it's happening. Is it still crazy? I think so, but I always thought it was true because it is true. Here's Rutgers College, a very prominent college, and they became the first U.S. college to make COVID injections mandatory for students in the middle of a school year, mind you. Now, what about those people that paid for the school experience and now are being told they can't come back? Isn't that illegal? Yes, it is. It's illegal, in my opinion, to force anybody to take any kind of medical injection, but that's aside from the point because your government's allowing it. International law makes it very clear. This is wrong. It's illegal. It's completely off the books, but they don't care. We need to get that through our heads. Rutgers, the largest public university in the state of New Jersey, became the first public school in the U.S. to announce that students wouldn't be allowed back to campus in the fall unless they've been fully vaccinated. Kids, by the way, right? I mean, I guess not kids, I guess over 18, younger adolescents, or I guess even not. I mean, what do we call them? If you're 18 to 20, what is that? I don't know. But that the interesting part is you do have people that are that age. Yes, you have people that are much older too, but it's a very weird scenario here. You could almost argue that this is another test, because this is something that people will kind of lean into. Well, we already make kids the kid or kids over here, but these are adults technically, right? 18 or older, you're an adult. So you're forcing adults to be vaccinated for something that they already committed to, for something they already paid for. Like, look, on its face, this is illegal no matter what, regardless of the circumstances. But you add these things to it, this becomes a crime in a lot of different ways. But because of the frenzy and mania around COVID-19 and the gospel of vaccine, this is going forward. I hope people make a huge deal about this. And I hope this school and the people that made this happen lose their jobs. Administrators and President Joe Biden's mandate, which is not a law, mind you, for everyone to be eligible for the vaccine by May, should give students plenty of time to get their shots. Right. So this was a plan. Make sure you understand that. We are committed to health and safety for all members of our community, and adding COVID-19 vaccination to our student immunization requirements will help provide a safer and more robust college experience for our students. Now, yes, understand that they do have requirements, but this is an experimental, still being tested mRNA injection. This is not even close to something that you can do this for, especially since it is literally still being tested. And it's not even approved. It is an emergency authorized vaccine. It is not the same as an approval. You can look it up for yourself right now. It's just staggering that this is even being allowed by anybody. It's because they've been convinced that this thing is good no matter what. Notably, the university added that students with religious and medical exemptions will be allowed to attend classes without the vaccine, which, I mean, I guess that's okay. I mean, that's definitely somebody being allowed to be exempt is okay or good. But the point is, how does that even make sense then? Because what we keep hearing is that undermines the whole process. Because if these people have it or don't have it, they can still spread and it still continues. If they can still catch it with the vaccine, what's the point? So you already are allowing people in the scenario that don't have any of it, and so they can spread it naturally no matter what. People who still have the vaccine anyway can still catch it and spread it. So why are they making them take it? I mean, I'm just baffled by this logic. There's no point to this. Lessening symptoms of the people who they claim have it does not stop the spread or create herd immunity. So this is simply profit-minded about the idea that we'll make it better soon. Of course, students who opt to continue taking classes online won't be bound by the mandate. Well, sure, when you pay $100,000 for college or wherever you are going, I'm sure Rutgers is probably more than that. But let's just say when you pay $100,000, you're paying to take classes on a computer? No, you're paying for your school, for engaging, for the social aspect. So these schools don't get to change this mid-year. That's just simply, they should be held criminally accountable for like a financial crime. Like they just can't take your money, false advertising. I don't know what you want to call it, but that is absolutely wrong. Some criticize the university's decision to grant staff and groundskeepers to professors an exempt from the ruling. Why? Just simply saying they won't be required. Why? How does that possibly make sense? It seems like the whole goal is just to get these certain age groups vaccinated, right? If you're not going to make sure that the people who are actually at more risk, you know, the older people, the groundskeeper staff, the professors, these are people that are older and at more risk, but you're not letting them get the vaccine or not making them do it. So that means they might not, which means they can still spread. This is stupid. There is zero logic other than at all costs, get these kids vaccinated. It says, as we wait to see whether more schools will allow follow Rutgers' lead, many Americans are wondering whether employers will impose similar requirements, which is already happening, guys. The way they phrase that's just wrong. It's literally already happening. Dr. Scott Gottlieb told CNBC in Friday morning interview that he doesn't expect employers, even though it's literally already happening, from airlines to, I mean, I forget which ones, you know, we've seen the show. I can't remember which one it was, though. I've pointed out at least two businesses that have already said that they're going to do this. But it says, which is funny. So Gottlieb is lying. He must know that. But they'll always lie in regard, and they'll just go, oh, I didn't know. Ignorance, incompetence, not criminal. You know how they always do it. But while they might not explicitly mandate vaccines, he says, Scott Gottlieb believes they will find ways to incentivize employees to get it done. Okay. So we won't force you, but we'll force you in other ways. Cool. Meanwhile, in the UK, citizens are pushing back against Prime Minister Boris Johnson's proposal to make vaccines mandatory to visit the pub. And here's another example. The no jab, no job for care workers is a start, but the government needs to go even further. It's all fake news, right? Because that's not how, clearly this has been something going on, and they're openly advocating for mandatory vaccination. If trials proved they were safe, I would vaccinate every child old enough to receive it as a condition of receiving a state education. You mean the children that are at zero risk? The children that aren't spreading? Yeah, but vaccinate them anyway because I'm a maniac spreading vaccination propaganda. This is just incredible. Why do we believe that they need this if they're not at risk, if they're not actually at risk? And we're putting them at risk with something that will cause, possibly cause blood clots or cause anaphylactic shock or create all kinds of things that we have seen happening. At the very least, that have been continuously reported. It says we all might end up in one, a nursing home. And it is hardly comforting to think that a casual sneeze by one of its staff in the day room or even a raised voice could amount to a death sentence. It does, though, in the age of COVID. Well, you know what else does? Any other thing at any other time throughout history when people are at risk, right? Let's first of all understand that the risk of this in regard to the general risk of COVID-19 here is not the risk that he's making out. It is not the, oh my God, hushed voice is so much. It's black plague. It's not how, this is a lie. It is not what they're making it out to be. But you know what else could do that? A lot of other things. So he's trying to make it out to be that right now it's different, except the fact that this has been shown to be the opposite of what we're talking about. Of course, it says vaccination isn't yet proven. Wait, okay, hold on a second. He starts out by saying, we have to do this. We have to get everyone vaccinated because this could be a death sentence. Then he goes, the next paragraph. Of course, vaccination isn't yet proven to prevent anyone from carrying it and thus spreading the disease, symptomatically or asymptomatically. And it isn't 100% protective and effective anyway. Yet, it might well do so for some individuals and would certainly contribute to a COVID-free environment for the nation's grand. Okay, so it went from mandatory vaccination because it might do something good for you. Do we not realize how completely broken these people are? Are you really arguing that because, look, he just said it is not proven. In fact, it is. It's already been shown to continually spread even after they're vaccinated. We've seen 100 cases of that. But he says anyway, after arguing for mandatory vaccination because we're all going to die from this, but this vaccine won't actually prevent it. You can still spread it. And it's not even 100% proven to be effective anyway. Yet it might well do so for some people. So my point is vaccinate everyone mandatory. I just don't even understand. This guy must have an agenda because there's no way any intelligent person could think that if you have a product that isn't proven to do what you say it does, but just for the off chance that it might have some effect, force it on everybody despite the other side effects. This is the same logic of the variants. Well, we don't know. It might be dangerous. So we might as well. Excuse me. Something in my throat. Anyway, but this is the idea. Based on unfounded concerns about things that might cause danger, and that's trusting the science, according to these people. A new law should explicitly abrogate any existing employee law. So dismissal would always be lawful. Oh, so just change every law to make sure we're allowed to do this. That sounds lawful to me. And would impose penalties on workers, including casuals and temps. And employers and agencies alike, it would need to be watertight. Grannies deserve nothing less. Oh, and you fall back to the worst, most ridiculous. What about the grannies? This is the equivalent of saying, what about the children? Which, you know, is a meaningless statement unless you're specifically talking about a provable thing we're staring at. This is the broad idea that by not blindly trusting these authorities that you're putting granny at risk. It's an emotional ploy. It is a warning, a reality of what can happen when vaccine hesitancy takes hold. Given the fact that we are still nowhere near herd immunity for the current coronavirus variants. Ah-ha-ha. And now you see the moving of the goalpost. Because the reason he said variants instead of nowhere near to current coronavirus for herd immunity is because, as we just pointed out, we are, in fact. Oh, this is the wrong article right here. Oh, no, that was back here. Here we go. Just showing you that. This is just the graph. You don't need to see it again. But the idea that we are, in fact, because when you include natural immunity, well, then you do. But But according to them, we're only concerned now about immunity to the variants. And seeing as how they come up every week, seemingly, what are we talking about? Of course, we're nowhere near herd immunity to the variant you just discussed last week. And then when a new one comes next week, well, we're starting all over again. Now we're nowhere near it. Now we got to keep doing this. Vaccine hesitancy. Why in the world would you be hesitant against something that doesn't ultimately achieve anything and you just keep taking it every time they tell you to? I'm not hesitant against that at all. The fact that they say variants is a huge disclosure right there. No, I've never even seen anybody make that claim that we're now waiting for herd immunity for the new variant. But you see how they keep moving the goalpost. And as somebody writes about that article, COVID deniers, vaccine hesitant, anti-mask conspiracy theorists, these are the accusations of hysterics in our global staging of the Salem witch trials, in which COVID-19 is the devil seen everywhere by every coward hoping to save his own skin. Well put. And I completely agree. Now, on top of that, as everything goes back to normal, of course, you're no longer allowed to leave England. You know, normal little stuff like that. It's officially now an offense. It's a crime to leave England. But it's all okay, though, because freedom and because we're protecting you and you're not allowed to leave. Right? Remember, like, the idea with the wall in this country. It's like, remember, walls work both ways. And they're like, you're so dumb. Well, here we are, where you're actually being charged with a crime if you dare to leave your own country without asking permission from your government, because that's all about freedom. After 4 hours of debate yesterday in the House of Commons, the United Kingdom has approved an emergency measure, of course, based on emergency, because we can clearly tell we're still in an emergency, right? No, we're not. And that's not even nearly close to being enough to justify it, but because they never stopped the original emergency justification or emergency declaration, they just keep using it. Just like with 9/11, Patriot Act, it's the same exact thing. We have an emergency measure based on something that keeps you locked into your country and not allowed to leave without permission of your government for your safety. That's what happened. Among other restrictions, we'll fine Britons who leave the country without a qualifying reason. Think about that. This is one of those moments where we're just talking about, where you think and go, man, 30 years from now, you look back and go, if we had only acted when we had a chance, you know, back before they built the wall, back before they told us we couldn't leave, back before they were forcing injections into your baby's arms, right? Maybe we just should have done something before that stopped or before we got too far. Now, it says, ironically, the British government insists that they can legally impose these new rules because of authority that was granted to them under a law called the Public Health Act, which just so happened to be passed in 1984. Almost too perfect. Starting on Monday, anyone who leaves England must submit papers making a certified declaration of their reason for leaving. The authorities will then retain the discretion to fine travelers £5,000, nearly $7,000 if the reason isn't valid. So this is sort of like taxes, where they're like, okay, you need to pay us for what we didn't tax you for last year. And you say, okay, IRS, let me know how much I owe you. And they go, oh, we know, but we won't tell you. Okay, so what happens if I guess wrong? Well, we fine you. It's like, okay, that's cool. So the IRS knows how much we should be paying them, but we have to go through our documents and guess at what we should be giving them. And if we get it wrong, then we have to pay more. Why don't they just tell you? Because there's more going on there. So here they're saying, well, go ahead and give us your reason. You can write it out, give us your declaration. But if we decide you're wrong, we'll just fine you. This is insane. The government has provided the list of 14 valid excuses. Oh, thanks, government. Such as professional football team traveling for a match, because we know that's completely essential. And this is totally fine. But someone who wants to attend, let's say, a religious pilgrimage is forbidden to travel. Sort of like the main image in my website, by the way. That's me traveling. Oh, that's this is actually the same image, but the original image, which you can see right here, that's me. I took that picture. That's me taking a picture of the people in front of me as we were walking along the El Camino de Santiago in Spain, which is a religious pilgrimage. And I highly recommend it to everybody. It changed my life. But funny that this is something you're just no longer allowed to do in the age of freedom, right? So is someone who wants to visit an elderly parent they haven't seen since 2019. You're just simply not allowed to see them at all. Unless, of course, you can prove that you reasonably believe they're dying. Thanks, government. That's very nice of you. But otherwise, nope, not allowed to see them. Doesn't matter how serious it is, can't see them. unless you, you know, vie for your government's favor and they allow you to do what you would already be and should be allowed to do. By the way, these new rules come despite members of parliament acknowledging in debate yesterday that, guess what? 95% of Brits over the age of 60 have been vaccinated. So this means that the most vulnerable population has been administered a vaccine that they insist is safe and effective. So why the lockdowns, right? If the people who are actually at risk are the ones that have been vaccinated, you begin to realize that it's not really about anything other than giving everybody this vaccine. Now, on to another story. This is one that we already sort of pointed out, but this seems very interesting to point out again in regard to how absurd they are so desperate to get you to think that mindlessly trusting your government is what good people should do. And it is painful. And I truly think that we are completely, like, I this next part especially, I hope you begin to see that we are possibly, at the very least, the actual majority. And that's why they're so desperate to drive this in, because they see that we are, and they're so afraid that we will see that we are. Now, Tracy Edwards, a New York Public Service Commission appointee, appeared with New York Governor Cuomo last week to encourage total ignorance and unquestioning loyalty to the public health officials. And you saw this, remember? She says, I'm not asking what's in the infusion. I'm not looking up all the ingredients in the infusion. I'm not sticking out my arm and I'm not taking the, or I am sticking out my arm and taking the infusion. And that's what we have to do. And the crowd, yay, mindless ignorance, yay. And this is what the public is being sold. Don't read any of the research. Don't make up your own mind. Don't have a conversation with your doctor to make informed decisions. Don't take even a moment to weigh potential costs and benefits. Instead, you should be deliberately ignorant and happy to do exactly what public health overlords tell you without question, because that's what good citizens do. And it says in parentheses, these are the same New York public health officials who, by the way, sent sick patients into nursing homes, killing countless people, and then covered it up. And we know that. And this person is still in charge. Right? Obey. Listen. Do what you're told. Man. And now this is that video. And I just want to point out how creepy this is. How this guy is just like, yeah, give him the lie. Tell him to give it to him. Like, he just is creepy as hell what that look is to me. And yes, that's my opinion. But I mean, we have to recognize how pathetically ridiculous this is. They made somebody stand up there and say, don't think for yourself. Don't look into things. Don't look into things. Just take this injection, despite the fact that this government has hurt people like this more than once, but just do it. It's like, and the point is, this guy is just like, yeah, right? Like, please get me off the hook here. Make this work. But listen to what she has to say.
See after a science.
Oh, wait a minute. Dang it. I just had it lined up and I lost it. Well, it doesn't matter. You've seen it before. Oh, here it is right here.
COVID has devastated the state. Long Island continues to be one of the hardest hit New Yorkers to have an infusion. And I'm going to have an infusion because I want to make sure right after this, I am going to have an infusion. And I'm going to have an infusion because I want to make sure that the cancer that was in my body does not return. I'm not asking what's in the infusion. I'm not looking up.
I love the background. Like, right. Preach it. Right. That's right. Don't even ask questions. Yeah. It's like, I just can't even understand this. It is so crazy to me.
All of the ingredients in the infusion. I am sticking out my arm and I am taking the infusion.
My God.
And that's what we have to do. Our communities take insulin.
God, dang, it's just so incredible to me. It makes me, it gives me a physical reaction because this is so shameful and they know that. And this is how I think clearly shows how desperate they are, because they are pushing things that they know will make people like us and even people that don't even see it yet go, what? Like, really? Like, you're really arguing that we shouldn't even think? Just allow them to, do you realize that there are other half of the government is saying that the other half is totally dangerous, shouldn't be trusted? But yeah, it's like, it's just even our government says we shouldn't trust the government. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But here they are going, yeah, just do what you're told because that makes you good. Well, here is what people really think, which is what I started to play a minute ago. This is a CNN reporter asking a restaurant about the vaccine. Now, here's the point of what this was supposed to be, and probably was. I'm not playing the full thing. I'm only playing the clip that was shared on Reddit here. But this is a CNN piece doing shameless reporting like they always do, where they try to go to some back area in Oklahoma where they can go in, and the whole framing of this is like, this is what those dangerous Trump supporters are doing with they're not getting vaccinated, and this is what it looks like to risk everybody, right? That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it first and continue to throw back to Trump, because that's all they can do. And make it look like, oh, this is what all the Trump supporters are doing. They're the ones that are keeping us all in danger. That's what they're trying to do. But what it really shows you, and I think what they don't realize, is that nobody trusts them. Now, whether you're in Oklahoma, whether you're in New York, I'm sure there are places where there's more predominance, but the idea here, and yes, specifically in Oklahoma, but the people are not buying this, man. And if you have entire places like this, and then the way he responds to them is it literally makes me laugh out loud, because this reporter is just baffled. He's just, you don't want it. It's an amazing thing, and it's helping people. And he's just like, how are you not just mindlessly saying, put it in my arm, like the lady said? You know, it's like these people are completely taken. And that's why we realize these reporters, if you want to call them that, These are some of the most uninformed, in my opinion, most of them unintelligent people that you'll find out there. And funny enough, they tend to think they're some of the most in the know people. Like, what's her name? I always use as a reference because of that Joe Rogan, where she just, what was her name now? I can't remember. The one that used the word toady. I can't remember, but it was just so embarrassing because she thought she was in a comfortable zone where Joe was going to be right with her with everything. And she started making points that she couldn't even back up. And Joe put like the smallest amount of pushback, and she was just lost, looking up on her phone. Let me find some examples of what other people tweeted. Oh, see, I was right. That's what she was doing. This is a New York Times writer. The point is, these people are completely lost with real pushback. But let's get to the point. They'll always fall off that. This is really important.
Idea to take the vaccine.
Oklahoma. And I have this question.
Does anybody in this restaurant think it's a good idea to take the vaccine?
No.
Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea. Anyone here, is a good idea to take the vaccine? Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea.
By the way, don't you just think this is really why do they think they have the right to do this? Right? CNN just walks inside the restaurant and interrupts everybody and they think so highly of themselves. They really do. They think they have the right to do whatever they want. And it just shows. Barry Weiss, thank you. Somebody put it in the chat. That's the woman I was talking about, the CNN, or excuse me, the New York Times manipulator.
Yeah. Not one person here thinks it's a good idea? It's a good thing.
No.
Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea. Anyone here, is a good idea to take the vaccine? Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea.
Crickets.
Not one person here thinks it's a good idea. Complete quiet.
Boise City is the county.
It's funny. I don't think he expected that.
County seat of sparsely populated Cimarron County, Oklahoma, where 92% of the voters chose Donald Trump on Election Day.
Right. See, why is that relevant? Because their entire point is that Trump supporters are the ones creating the problem. Because really, that is an irrelevant point in regard to just simply whether, because if you really wanted to do a real piece about this, you would go around and you would ask them whether they wanted it, and you would go into why. And he does this, but he's not wanting to find out why. He wants to make them say something that they can then point to and say, see, fake news, conspiracy theory. That's what they wanted to do. But to really ask them genuine questions to find out what they're really concerned about, right? I mean, you'll see what I mean.
The highest percentage in a state where all 77 counties went for Trump.
What do you think about the vaccine? Are you going to take the vaccine?
No, sir.
Tell me why.
Well, I don't trust the government, and I don't trust Biden.
Chad and Misty Hughes are husband and wife. Neither of them plan to get the vaccine.
Just don't want to.
Why don't you want to? If you don't mind me asking.
Because when I take the flu shot, I usually get the flu, so there's no reason to take it.
Are you saying you think you'll get COVID by taking the COVID vaccine?
Probably.
Why are you thinking that? The research doesn't show that at all.
Right. Except, and this is what's funny, right? Is except the fact that there has been thousands of people in Israel that have gotten it after the vaccine. Now, maybe it's because they just catch it and it's proving, again, the vaccine doesn't actually do anything. But it could also mean that there is something happening there. Now, I'm not saying I can prove that, but I have seen a lot of real world examples of that happening, of people saying that they got it and then they got sick. So it's not illogical. It's more, as what I love is this guy saying the research doesn't show that. Oh, you mean the ongoing trials that are still happening? So it means that we don't have all the full information yet? Yeah, that one's CNN. But pretend like you've got everything you need, because this guy is, I mean, the idea is that anybody should, he just doesn't want it, period. And he's saying, I don't trust it because of the vaccine before. And by the way, that's a real thing. The idea people can, the idea that people get the flu shot and then catch the flu has been shown over many times. And again, they try to pretend like that's not true. And yes, we're talking about two very different kinds of vaccine, or really a vaccine versus an experimental injection. But I just find it funny that this guy just cannot understand this. And yet he still drills in that the research is there. What, listen to what he says next.
Shows that it keeps people safe.
That's just my choice.
He says the research shows it keeps people safe. The ongoing trial to find that out, he's saying, already shows that, even though it's not done, though. That's real good journalism.
Why are you thinking that? The research doesn't show that at all. It shows that it keeps people safe.
That's just my choice.
These women are sisters, and they, too, are doubters.
Why are you doubtful?
They just started rolling them out.
Well, yeah, but they, I mean, this has been a worldwide effort. Okay.
Get this is this guy. So was this guy here to get their opinions, or is he here to convince them to get vaccinated? Right. This is not journalism. This is pandering. Oh, he's saying she's saying it. I want to play it again because I want you to hear what she has to say. And this is the most valid point. She's simply going, I just don't trust it because it's just came out and I have a right to wait. But it's worldwide. But everyone else is. This is the equivalent of saying, look at them. They're doing it. All the cool kids are doing it. Why aren't you doing it? Right? Where's the dad to come in and say, if everyone jumped off a cliff, would you do it too? This guy would go, is it a vaccine cliff? Then yes. Right? A worldwide effort by great doctors. Yeah. You mean by people that are financially motivated, like NIH, to make this happen, and groups like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and all these different people involved with this mRNA platform and the different, I mean, this is something that is not even close to what he's talking about. Even great doctors, we're talking about vaccine companies. We're talking about Pfizer and AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson and Moderna that have been shown to lie. But yeah, worldwide effort by great doctors. That sounds better.
By great doctors.
They too are doubters.
Why are you doubtful?
They just started rolling them out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this has been a worldwide effort by great doctors.
They claim that the flu can be cured, but still hundreds of thousands of people die from the flu.
Well, yes, a lot of people die from the flu, but not nearly as much as COVID. This is a horrible pandemic, and this is like an amazing vaccine. These vaccines have come out. They're saving lives.
This is like an amazing vaccine. Like, that's not even, he's not even trying to be, that is just, I think this thing's good. Why don't you? There's no science there. There's no facts. It's an amazing vaccine that is still being tested. That's an experimental thing that has never been successfully done. It's not even actually authorized. It hasn't even tested properly, but it's amazing. Look at all these people getting blood clots. It's amazing. Look at Germany and Norway proving that it can cause it. Oh my God. It's amazing. Look at all the anaphylactic shock and the deaths reported in the 500 to 900 times the reported events than flu shots. Her point is that people die from it already. It wasn't that it wasn't that COVID less. Her point is they keep telling us they're going to cure the flu with the vaccine, and every year people die. So is they're ever going to do it, or is it just about continuing to get you to take the vaccine? So like, she is far more intelligent than this guy, it would seem.
I didn't believe
it. No. I will just agree to disagree on this subject, I guess.
I'm just not going to take it.
What if President Trump came out and was very robust and said, take the vaccine?
Oh, you mean like he's done every time he talks about it? Do you realize how ridiculous CNN is? Like, it is just straight. You know what? It might not. I would argue that it's not even necessarily that all these people know that they're lying. This guy probably assumes that Trump never did because he trusts his own narrative. He listens to what the people tell him in the newsroom and he believes that. I could show you 11 clips of Trump standing up and aggressively, in his word, in a robust way, asking people to get the vaccine. He's saying this is the most best, beautiful vaccine I've ever seen, and we did it all for you. And he's still saying that. So this guy is just really stupid to argue something that is flagrantly, clearly happening. And his point is, well, if Trump said you should take it, would you? Okay, he already did multiple times. But listen to what they say.
took it, even though I didn't tell anybody about it. It was kind of done secretly, but I think he should take it. He said it a little bit, but he hasn't been robust about it. If he was robust...
Oh, I see. I see. So, robust. So he just needs to say it in a robust manner. Like, you take the vaccine versus take the vaccine. And then, oh, then they would have done it. These guys are clown shoe ridiculous.
Take it, would you?
No.
Even if Trump said it, he said no. Now, these people, this is why this guy doesn't understand this, right? He doesn't realize that people don't only act in regard to their politics. They act in their own self-interest. He's just like, what? And of course, this is funny because this guy speaks up and says Trump is a liberal New Yorker. Why would we listen to him? CNN just, his head explodes.
New Yorker. Why would we listen to him either?
Did you vote for him?
He was the best option.
Ah, right. So did you vote? Oh, you voted for him. Then everything else you said doesn't matter. You voted for Trump.
No matter where we went, enthusiasm for the vaccine wasn't easy to find, despite this front page pronouncement. Yeah.
So this is the Boise.
Oh, wait. So you mean the mainstream media was saying something and they didn't believe it? No. How is that possible?
City News, your newspaper. And here's an article. COVID vaccines are available in your hospital. They want people to get them. Are you going to get one?
No, sir.
How come?
I really don't ever get vaccines.
I just love it. I mean, it kills me. This is the opposite of what they expected, I would argue. But the fact that he's going, oh, they say they're available. You don't want it? Like, I don't understand. It's just, it's crazy. But what that accidentally shows you, I think, is that people are not buying it. I need us to consider that we are, in fact, the majority, that people like that out there are not along with this. At the very least, that a huge portion of this country is just passively not. It's not that they're screaming online. It's not that they're taking a political stance. They just don't care. And they're not going to do it. But the media abuses that and it wants you to believe that the most vocal, uninformed minority is, in fact, what everybody thinks. And they abuse that because even people like us seemingly have to look at the mainstream media to get a perception of the majority, because how else do you do that, right? Only mainstream platforms, mainstream, social media. That's really the only way. So what we need to do is at least consider the fact that we are, in fact, the majority, and that's why this is happening, and that's why they're so desperate to manipulate people. Now, in regard to the vaccine, I wanted to point out one more thing that I thought was important. Now, this is not this page, actually. The next one, Christian, and this, I'm not going to get into this deep, but I just wanted to point this out as kind of a, you guys should watch this. This is, here's the actual video. This is Ice Age Farmer, Gert Vandenbosch, whistleblower or Trojan horse, COVID vax enhance zoonotic risk. But basically what this is, a great video where he's not making any claims. He's not even making a conclusion. He's simply going over all the information on either side of this and letting you choose for yourself. And so I highly recommend this because he and I are pretty eye to eye on this. We talked about it when I interviewed him, you know, and it's the same point that it's not wrong for people to point out what this guy said in regard to why this current use is dangerous. But we need to be very, very skeptical about where that then leads us if we're going to trust this guy as some kind of whistleblower. Because after that, what he's arguing is exactly the same thing in a different way. So this could just be a sidestep to continue the same narrative that leans into vaccination at all costs for variants and whatever else. That's dangerous. But Christian does a really good job going over this, and I think will change a lot of minds in regard to, at the very least, why we should be skeptical of this guy. But doesn't mean he's lying. Doesn't mean he doesn't believe what he's saying, right? These are very important nuances to this conversation. It's not always shill versus whistleblower. That's not always how this goes, right? So important to listen. I hope you will. Now, going over to the final story today, which I really think, oh, actually, no, technically not the final story. I forgot we're going to talk about masks at the end. And in fact, who knows, I may push that because of time. I'm looking at it. But this story is ridiculous. And it just speaks to the moral ambiguity, the illegal mentality of these vaccine companies that are currently being trusted with your safety. U.S. veterans sue drug companies over Iraq bribes. Lawsuit accuses multinationals of indirectly funding terrorists who killed U.S. soldiers. Now, before we get into the story, or actually, let me just read the first paragraph. Several U.S. veterans and relatives of soldiers killed or wounded in Iraq, this is 2017, sued five pharmaceutical and medical equipment makers on Tuesday, accusing them, in effect, of funding an Iraqi terrorist militia that killed hundreds of American soldiers following 2003 U.S.-led invasion. Now, you can see right here, named in the suit are the parent companies and subsidiaries of AstraZeneca, General Electric, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Roche Holding. Now, before we get into the story, it's important to understand that this is a muddling of U.S. government military propaganda coming from the mindset of the people who were in that war, arguing that these companies were funding the very people that they were fighting at the time, which clearly happened. The only thing I want you to remember is that the argument that they were that these are terrorist organizations is ridiculous, because what we're talking about is an illegal invasion of a sovereign country. That's what this was, right? And so when they were illegally invading Iraq, they have every right to defend themselves, right? So that's not to speak on this specific group about things that they might have done before that. But in the argument here that they were fighting back against soldiers who were illegally invading Iraq under the guise of weapons of mass destruction, it's impossible to frame that as a terrorist act. That's a point I always make. If some group was invading Florida and Americans were fighting them off, that would be the same as calling those Americans terrorists for defending Florida. It's just really stupid. But okay, just understanding that, it will go through and you'll hear the similar language. Just recognize that these soldiers believe, and in fact prove, I would argue, that these companies were bribing government officials and working with these companies in Iraq, which then filtered down to these same groups that they were fighting. Even though those groups had a right to defend themselves, the still point is, in the mindset of the soldiers, these companies, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, were funding groups that they were fighting. Now, you want to pretend that the U.S. government didn't know that? Are we going to pretend that they didn't know that after the fact? Are we going to pretend they don't know that now? So why is it okay for a pharmaceutical company to have money funneling into the very group the U.S. government is currently waging a war against, and we're going to pretend that's not treasonous? Or at the very least, a crime. At the very least, now currently working with them and trusting that they're doing what's right as they've lied and bribed and cheated and stolen. It's ridiculous. But let's get into this. A civil lawsuit filed in federal court in Washington accuses multinationals of routinely bribing Iraqi Ministry of Health officials to win drug contracts. Now, this is the narrative, right? This is what these people say that they were doing. And it's probably what the surface level argument was. And that money then found its way into the hands, and we'll get into that part as well. But the question we need to ask is, well, on top of that, is that all they were doing? Doesn't really sound like it's worth it to do this in order to just get drug contracts, which you could get a lot of other places. It sounds to me, most likely, based on how we know these war zones go, that there was some experimentation going on, that there was some testing going on, that there was some kind of illicit activity going on, maybe genetic activity going on. That's what happens in these places. We know that, I mean, Vanessa Bailey, Eva Bartlett, they've shown this 10 times over in regard to human trafficking, organ trafficking, coming from the very groups the U.S. government is funding, as well as Israeli government and the U.K. government and so on. But the point is, if they're here in a time that is very contentious, knowing that if they were in the wrong spot or fell out of favor, that this could literally be treason, I argue that there was probably more going on, and I bet it had to do with the government. That's my opinion. In fact, what I mean, the governments, not the Iraqi government, but the governments outside of that, who were abusing the situation to experiment on people, knowing that we're, I don't know, 3 years out of altering our evolution with nanotechnology, or 3 years out from the planned Great Reset, right? I mean, maybe there was something that we were testing, sort of like the Tesla car, and when we were seeing how things operate going forward. Just a thought. Now, also to point out that this group they're talking about, Jayesh Al-Mahdi, Robert Inlakesh has pointed out, they don't even exist anymore. So it's interesting. Now, but the question is, and I think he might look more into this, is what we were actually doing there. But going forward with what we do know, remember, we're talking about AstraZeneca, General Electric, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Roche Holding. Corporate bribery helped fund the Mahdi Army's acquisition of weapons, training, and logistical support, the lawsuit claims. So they're saying that this money went directly into the hands of the groups they were fighting, even giving them weapons from vaccine companies. The health ministry and the terror group, which again, talking about the militia, were so intertwined that U.S. officials labeled the militia the Pill Army. A nod, that Mr. Sadar's habit of paying young troops with drugs that they could resell rather than cash, the suit alleges. Now, where do you think those drugs were coming from? Clearly, there was some fishy stuff going on here. Now, were those tests themselves? Was there something in those drugs? Right? I mean, I genuinely feel that there's much more happening in this story. Among goods sold to Iraq were Seroquel, AstraZeneca's antipsychotic, GE electrocardiogram machines, Johnson & Johnson's catheters and anti-epilepsy drugs, Depo-Provera, Pfizer's birth control shot, and Herceptin, Roche's breast cancer drug, the lawsuit claims. Pfizer denies, of course, any wrongdoing. Quote, our mission is to provide medicines to patients to help better their lives, even if that means committing treason, right? It's totally okay, right? It's just ridiculous to pretend like doing deals in the middle of a war, an illegal war, mind you, is totally okay. That would only be okay if you were doing something on the behest of the U.S. government, which is probably why no one ever got in trouble. Oh, just jumped the point there a bit. AstraZeneca and J&J did not immediately respond to requests for comment. So AstraZeneca and J&J just kept quiet. Pfizer speaks up because they've seen pretty like Pfizer's always been very forward about like this is the five member Pfizer's the group that's demanding these foreign governments put up their own collateral with their own money in case something happens with the shots. Pfizer's been very they clearly know that they can get away with whatever they want. I think that's their track record of billions of dollars of safety of committing crimes and not actually being held accountable for them. That's why they speak up and go, we didn't do anything wrong. Right. But the other ones were just like, no comment. We don't want to get in trouble. Now, it goes on to say most of the defendants have a documented history of paying bribes that supported terrorism under Saddam, according to one of the plaintiff's attorneys. Remember, Saddam Hussein being the person that was a chief ally of the U.S. government right up until he became the biggest bad guy in the world. J&J in 2011 paid $70 million to settle U.S. criminal and civil charges that its subsidiaries had paid kickbacks to win contracts in Iraq and other countries. Okay, so if J&J settled, it means these things happened, regardless of what the other ones want to say about it. GE paid more than $23 million in 2010 to settle Securities and Exchange Commission charges that it had paid kickbacks for health ministry contracts under the Oil for Food program. You know, that program that basically raped this country, everything. This country was completely outsourcing its resources under the guise of helping them with food. It was a joke. And this is one of the things where George Galloway got called out for this, and he demolished them in front of Congress, pointing out that they were the ones that were profiteering with this and trying to scapegoat him. These were the criminals trying to blame it on other people. That's why these companies basically just paid a small fine. It says the companies also use the U.S. banking system to funnel dollars to Iraq to pay alleged bribes. But let's pretend like the banks and the government had no idea about that. Also remember that cryptocurrency is where it all happens, not the banking system. Just repeat that over and over as they continue to use the banking system to launder money, sell and buy and resource drugs, you know, all the stuff that we know they do with the banking system, but it's all cryptocurrency. Ongoing illegal activity. Now jump forward to 2019. Still going. Iraq veterans are suing pharma companies for allegedly supporting Shia militias. The lawsuit, originally filed in 2017 and due for another look by a judge later this month, alleges the companies made deals with the Iraqi health ministry with full knowledge that it was affiliated with the Shia group militia. Quote, some U.S. government personnel in Iraq called Jaish al-Mahdi the pill army because Sadar and his Jaish al-Mahdi commanders were notorious for paying their terrorist fighters, as they frame it, in diverted pharmaceuticals. Where are those coming from? Rather than the cash, the defendants include AstraZeneca, as we already pointed out. All five defendants have filed multiple motions to dismiss the lawsuit. Of course they have, on the grounds that they couldn't have known that, quote, more than 300 armed attacks, according to the complainant, allegedly resulted from their contracting with the act. So that's them admitting that it did happen, but we couldn't have known that. We couldn't have known by selling illicit contracts to a current government under war from the U.S. government, that we would possibly know that would cause problems. That is patently absurd. I don't even understand how that's not the idea that the government is saying imagine what happens today. Some guy goes over to Syria to be a journalist and they accuse him of being ISIS and is arrested with no charge for years. Derek Bros covered that. He was a U.S. citizen. In this case, we have pharmaceutical companies arming these groups and they go, nah, $23 million, you're fine. It's just clearly the government was involved with this. I don't know how we could see it any other way. But funny enough, by the way, so this is 2019 or this one right here. But for some reason, none of these would link to the actual documents, which is always a point that I want you to recognize. That Military Times does a pretty good job, but specifically like Financial Times, the mainstream, they're talking about something. They're talking about a case. And they actually reference the case and they reference the information. But you know what they don't do? Cite the material. So you can't look into it for yourself. All you can do is trust what Financial Times says about it. Now, if a blog does that, they're like, why would we ever trust this? So all you're trusting is the reputation of the mainstream media. And that's just stupid. But that's what's happening. So I had to find, I seriously probably went through probably 15 of these articles to find the one. Fierce Pharma happened to be the one that actually shared the lawsuit, the actual link to the PDF. Now, this will be here if you want to look through it for yourself. This is the full lawsuit, and it actually shows right here, you know, so you can see AstraZeneca, all the other ones in there, Johnson & Johnson. You know, this is definitely a real lawsuit. But the point is to jump to its resolution, which I also took trouble to find. But this is as of 2020. And you won't be shocked to find out what happened. Now it says, all defendants moved to dismiss, arguing that plaintiff's complaint fails to state a claim under the ATA. Now it says, the foreign defendants, so like not Pfizer, right? The other ones that are based outside and only do some business in the country, moved to dismiss for what's called lack of personal jurisdiction, right? To dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction. But it also says that the not foreign defendants simply sue for motion dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. And of course, as you can see here, that the judge rules that those are granted, that they're dismissing the entire case based on, for the foreign groups, a lack of personal justification, jurisdiction, excuse me, for the local ones, a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. So you know what that shows you? First of all, they didn't come out and say, we didn't do this. That's not true. We plead not guilty. They didn't do that. They came out and said, you don't have a right to charge us with these things. Because that's what honest groups do. No, that's what groups do with that know they have impunity. Now get this. This is what lack of personal just jurisdiction means. It says you represent an international client supplying manufactured goods to a third party or also a foreign entity. So say one of these foreign groups doing a deal with a foreign country under a supply agreement with a US-based entity. The supply agreement was negotiated at an arm's length and signed abroad. Your client has no other contract with the domestic entity. After a time, the conceptual relationship sours and your client begins to directly supply the third party, effectively cutting out the US entity. The US entity learns of this and brings suit to federal court alleging breach of contract, the international interference with a business expectancy. Your client has no assets or presence in the United States and is certainly not prepared for drawn out and expensive federal litigation. What do you do? Under these admittedly narrow set of circumstances, one of the first questions to ask is, quote, does this court have personal jurisdiction over my client? In this case, the client being AstraZeneca. If they do not, an immediate motion to dismiss under Rule 12b6 should be filed. So the point is they're saying you don't have a right to charge us with this because you don't have personal jurisdiction. Because we're not a U.S. company and we're talking about Iraq. So they didn't say we didn't do this. They said basically we did do this, but you can't charge us. Think about that. Now, in regard to the local ones, they use what's called jurisdiction over subject matter or subject matter jurisdiction. Here's what it says. Subject matter jurisdiction means that the court has the authority to hear the type of case or controversy initiated in its court. Federal courts have original source matter jurisdiction over cases involving a question issue of federal law. Now it says federal courts have original subject matter over jurisdiction over cases in which the parties have diverse citizenship. Hold on. I had a part highlighted here. No. So basically the idea, I don't want to have to find what I think this must have refreshed. In any case, the point is the same idea, but for local, right? The idea is what they're basically boils down to is they're saying that you don't have the right because of this loophole, because of this reason. At the end of the day, what they're arguing is that these people armed our enemy and that killed people. And they know that. And two of them have already settled out of court. And these people, all they can do is just be basically stand there and say, you can't even charge me. You don't have a right to charge me. These are the people that we're trusting right now. We're being told to trust them because they wouldn't lie about the safety. They wouldn't do anything criminal. Well, how do you feel about that? I certainly don't trust them. And I think we know based on plenty of other examples. Oh, wait, you know that I was going to grab a different one, but this one is also good to bring up. But hold on. Oh, here it was. Oh, no. Which one was that? Pfizer violations. Here we go. Bingo. So remember, Pfizer's one of these groups. And as I always point out, we're talking about safety-related offenses, $1 billion. $100 million. We're over here on the billions. $1 billion right there. $1 billion, 19 offenses for government contracted related offenses, $3.3 billion for healthcare related offenses, like lying about safety, lying about advertising, you know, offering a product that doesn't do what they say it does, off-label or unapproved promotion of medical products, false claims, $1 billion, 19, right? And here's what the National Library of Medicine had to say about it. Where was it? Right here. Pfizer has been a habitual offender, persistently engaging in illegal and corrupt marketing practices, bribing physicians, and suppressing adverse trial results. Why are we trusting this? They're outrageous. It's obvious. Everybody from all different walks of life, including previously your own government, were calling these companies out for criminals. They're paid billions of dollars for crimes, for lying about exactly what we're trusting them for right now. Oh, and don't forget that they help arm the enemy, as it were, in regard to how you believe in this situation during the war of invasion, the illegal invasion of Iraq, and did so to make illicit deals with the government. And God knows what else they were doing over there. And the U.S. soldiers believe these companies got their friends killed. And your government doesn't care about that. Pretty incredible. But to finish up with the mask discussion, I will go over this. This is the same article I was pointing out before, but there's a mask part at the bottom I wanted to point out. Now, this is in regard to Rand Paul calling out Dr. Fauci for a second time. It says, Paul spoke with his host, Neil Cuvoto, to talk about his recent exchanges with Dr. Fauci regarding forcing people to wear masks after they have received the coronavirus vaccine. If the government is going to tell you you can't go anywhere unless you're wearing a mask, they should tell you why, and they should present the evidence. Isn't that funny? Because you'd like to believe that they are, because they're saying, trust the science, right? No, they're not. Paul is asking the government to provide evidence that those who have been infected with the coronavirus or that have been vaccinated are still transmitting the disease, right? Because I'm glad he's saying that, because we're talking about natural immunity right there. Paul went on to describe Fauci's approach to masks as emotionalism and fear-mongering. Dr. Fauci needs to put up or shut up, he said. He needs to show us the scientific evidence that it's a problem after you've been vaccinated or after you've already got the disease naturally. Paul explained that if Fauci presented evidence proving that vaccinations of prior infection were not effective against new variants, he would reassess his stance on masks. Now, I argue I'm concerned about that, because this, just like everything else, could simply be a way to give you a little bit of fake resistance to only circle back to go, okay, now I'm convinced we all need to wear masks. I hope that doesn't happen. If it does, I'll argue Rand Paul is wrong, because he is wrong. But it says, if he were to say that, it says, so far, all he's telling me is his opinion. Really, their opinion is, look, they had another one of these vaccine doctors on television. He was like, oh, it's about civility. Civility is not science. For God's sakes, for goodness sakes, show us some evidence to back up these mandates. Incredible. But let's take a listen to what this doctor has to say. And I think this is a really, really important part. Now, I think I had this one too. Let me see. Maybe not. This should be loud enough, though. So this is Dr. Lee Merritt, MD, one of the America's frontline doctors, which, of course, for some people means immediately dismissing what she's saying, which is just stupid. Because it doesn't matter what you're saying, as long as you can look up the facts and verify it for yourself. But of course, the people that would dismiss this about watching it are people that never look up the facts and verify it for themselves, because they've been convinced that doing that makes you a conspiracy theorist. That's how stupid these people are. But, well, what are you going to do? But let's listen to what this woman has to say and recognize that what she's saying is the truth. Because it's stuff that I've already gone over. I have the science and the facts that I could show you myself. But what's most important is to recognize that she's a medical doctor who is admitting to you that these things were not the case before COVID-19.
You know, I'm going to tell you, I think this is a nonsense narrative, and you don't need a medical degree, and you don't need a lot of science background to figure this out. A little common sense goes a long way. Now, this is a little meme I got early on in this whole thing, and it shows a guy in an ear loop face mask. This is the kind of mask that we're being told you have to wear in the hospital for the protection of patients and yourself.
Let me know if that's loud enough. If not, I can do this at a later time and download this. But while I pause it here, this is a meme that's been going around that makes this is actually a really good point, because what they're showing you here, and this is a real guy. This guy even I wrote an article about this, going, "I'm famous now for my nose," and it's actually real. What he did is he shared this picture after doing drywall, and what he showed, he was not trying to make a mask point. What it says is class 2 medical device ear loop face mask. Each particle of sheetrock dust that you can see there is 10 microns. Coronavirus is 0.125 microns, as I understand it, between 0.1 and 0.3. Any questions? So the point is, if 10 micron dust can get through the mask and collect around your nose, and in fact, if you look close enough, you can actually see it. And he even says this in his own article. You can see that the dust is on his nostril hairs. And again, he says that in his own article. How are we pretending that this is going to stop a virus? But again, that was never the case, and it's never been the case.
Here's a guy who's doing drywall. He's putting up, you know, the same thing that builds buildings. He's putting up drywall, and drywall particles are 10 microns. Okay, the coronavirus is 0.1 microns. You can see what this does to drywall. Do you really think, and the beauty of this picture is that we can see drywall particles. The problem is you cannot see the coronavirus. But this is very obvious. And it's not just that it's getting through the mask. It's not protecting you at all. But look at where it's going. The mask is actually acting almost like a Venturi effect, and the particles are around the guy's nose.
Yep.
And I'm going to talk about later that may be pertinent, because we're finding out mask. I said the strongest argument for mask wearing is it sounds good. The strongest argument against mask wearing is it doesn't work at all. But it actually might even be worse than that. Now,
and that's my point. Not working is definitely one of the most important things to make sure we understand, that this does not have a statistically significant effect on reducing transmission of viruses, but it also has negative effects to your health. It increases your risk of illness, and it absolutely verifiably, coming from the British Medical Journal, coming from the NIH, coming from the Lancet, different groups. I'm going to go ahead and pull that one out just in case I'm incorrect, because I don't want to be wrong about this stuff. But the British Medical Journal, which, I mean, since I even pulled it back now, I might as well show you the one that I'm talking about, which many of you have seen 100 times over. But this is an important one. And the only reason I'm bringing it up again, because I don't want to bring this up and waste time, was just because I mistakenly said something wrong right there. But I want you to see very clearly, this is the British Medical Journal, right? That's the British Medical Journal telling you that cloth masks, 100%, increase your risk of infection. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may risk your increase your risk of infection. And I shouldn't have said 100% right there. What I meant was they absolutely do. But it may increase your risk of infection. That's a fact. And what they say is more research is needed. As a precautionary measure, we shouldn't be using cloth masks. That's what it says. And it goes on to tell you that the rates of all infection outcomes were the highest in the cloth mask arm. And it also points out that penetration of cloth masks, like your bandana, or even any other kind of cloth mask we're talking about, 97% the droplets get through. 97, according to the British Medical Journal. Even medical masks were 44%. This is the only random controlled trial of cloth masks there. I haven't seen another one. You show it to me, I'll talk about it. But they haven't done one. They point to new studies and new things that are not random controlled trials, that are not gold standard, that are observational, in a lab, whatever, and they pretend like that means more. This is the point. Now, on top of that, as I was going to continue to say, is numerous other outlets, and the ones they tell us we're supposed to listen to, including the CDC, mind you, have shown you that there are negative health effects, including verifiable, as a machine verified reduction in blood oxygen level, which increases, and on top of that, the possibility of hypercapnia, hypoxia, which really one leads to the other. Hypoxia leads to hypercapnia, which is why you begin to hyperventilate when you have a mask on, because you're breathing in too much CO2 because you're not getting enough oxygen. Now, this was dismissed as ridiculous in the beginning. I always include these, as I tend to try to show you. Might be over here. Let me see. No. I'll just pick one up real quick. For those that are new to the channel, there's always some. Oops. Every single one of my videos or my shows and videos in regard to the daily wrap-up, you will always find underneath them, even if I'm not really talking about masks, I haven't even put the links in the shows yet today, right? You can see that. But already you have 5 NIH National Library of Medicine studies from 2004, 2020, all finding verifiable health effects, like I just talked about. You got the cloth mask study right there, and then you've got all these studies, only some of them,
which find ultimately that there's not a statistically significant reduction in transmission. They're all there for you, right? It's just crazy.
My friend, who's an anesthesiologist, and this is the box the mask came in. By the way, you have boxes similar out there. I just read the same thing. And it says right on the box of these ear loop masks, these masks do not provide protection against COVID or other viruses and contaminants. It's not like we never looked at this before. You know, OSHA knows about this. Now, size matters when it comes to viruses and masks, okay? So just to put this in perspective, what we're dealing with are the smallest groups of viruses. We're not saying masks don't work for it.
Now, this is really important. Right. Because what she's going to argue here is that they may work for some, which I take issue with. But that's irrelevant. What we're talking about here is that there's very different sizes with different viruses. Right. And if we're talking about these things that can stop something that's large, they absolutely can't stop something that is 0.125 microns. That's what she's ultimately saying.
Masks were designed basically for tuberculosis. And they work for these things. Tuberculosis is a big globular mycobacterium, but it doesn't work for these tiny, tiny viruses. So coronavirus is in the family like rhinovirus, adenovirus, influenza. These are the seasonal respiratory viruses that come around every year. And the one you should look at, smallpox. Okay, I got interested when I was on a committee looking at defense stuff. I'm worried about smallpox. Smallpox is the most deadly disease known to mankind. Now, in the 20th century, smallpox killed more people than all the wars put together. I think if we could have masked it away, we would have done so. Unfortunately, and that's a bigger virus particle than this. So, next. This is just an overview of masks. You have to have a mask to get into Costco. That's why it's the Costco-approved mask list here. So, the guy on the left is a surgeon, and we're going to talk about surgical masks. Surgical masks really are for two reasons. It's to prevent blood and fluids to splash on us, and it's to prevent us from accidentally drilling in the wound.
Exactly.
I love the mask on the top. That's an OSHA N95 mask. So there are two types of N95 masks. The one on the bottom is a medical N95 mask where it says TB. The one on the top is the OSHA N95 mask, and that's for industrial use, like the guy doing drywall. Now, it's great. These masks are rated to filter out 95% of 0.3 or bigger micron dust.
Now, where have you heard that before? Remember when I made that point like 8 months ago and there were all these debunked videos came out? This is a simple fact that's backed up by the mask companies and OSHA and numerous others, and including the ones who make N95 masks. But it's just the people, I don't know whether it was the Z-Dog guy or other people, but they just make these videos. Oh, that's so stupid because that's not true. And they stop everything. These were doctors that were saying this. Did they believe it? Were they lying? Who knows? But they were wrong.
But that's a one-way valve. So, you know,
another big point, right? The N95s have a one-way valve. So why then did the people in the beginning pretend those were the best thing you could use? Because there's two kinds, obviously, but I still see people out there with the valve. So how does that work if they're only meant to protect your grandma, but you wear one that lets you breathe out without stopping anything? Who cares? Just wear something over your face.
If you think you're protecting your neighbor, when you blow out, you're just blowing out whatever you have in your system out to the air. In contrast, now, this is a very serious mask on the bottom, the TB mask there. That's what we're putting nurses in now for 8 hours a shift in the ICUs. And I'm going to tell you, these are somewhat hateful to wear. I probably had to wear one 3 times in my life for surgery. It's not very common. But people that you suspect of TB, you wear this mask. And here's the thing. As a physician, here's what we do. When you're in the hospital, these things come in sizes. So it's not just you just put them off the shelf and wear them.
Right.
Your size is sized to you, just like shoes. You're taught by the infectious disease nurse how to put them on, and we know how to take them off sterilely so we don't contaminate the environment around us. You know, what do we see people doing? They take the mask off, they put them on the dinner table, put the phone on it. I mean,
right. This is ridiculous. Like what she's saying, if you have to be trained to properly handle and put on and sized for these things, yes, we're talking about N95s. But the whole point is if they're trained, not just the sizing, like how to handle it and how to put it on with the proper way. You have people, if you just go sit in a, go to the mall tomorrow and watch these people that will hang these things from their chest or set them on the chair or put them on the mall food court table and then jam that gross wet thing back on their face and think they're keeping themselves safe. This is medical misinformation.
This is not going to get us anywhere. Next slide. Sorry. The other masks, by the way, they're just reading out common sense. Now, we're cutting off my slides, unfortunately, but this is the first myth of mask wearing is that, oh, you hear this all the time. Oh, I know that it doesn't screen out everything, but I'm sure I can tell it's screening out my, I'm not coughing and sneezing on people, and that must make a difference, right?
Right. This is the classic fallacy. Saying, well, if it does something, you might as well do it, which of course ignores the absolutely clear side effects of your health. But that's not even true, though, about it does something. But on top of that, the other one, which we'll get to, is that it reduces the amount of virus that you take in. These are all not true.
That's a myth. Okay, next slide. Here's
in case you missed it, she just said that was a myth. I mean, I just go back real quick.
We're cutting off my slides, unfortunately, but this is the first myth of mask wearing is that, oh, you hear this all the time. Oh, I know that it doesn't screen out everything, but I'm sure I can tell it's screening out my, I'm not coughing and sneezing on people, and that must make a difference, right? That's a myth. Okay.
That's a myth.
Here's, I got this from from Patrick Wood. I got this by permission, but anyway, so this is an anesthesiologist, Dr. Todd. And he's vaping in a mask. Now, this is a surgical mask, and I'll make this surgeon's joke that he's an anesthesiologist, so he's wearing his mask too loose. But I'll go back one. You went too fast. Okay. So this mask, you can see, it does exactly what we're told to do. Okay. It screens out. It's keeping that surgeon from spitting anything in the wound. Nothing's going out to the front, but what's it doing? It's going out to the sides.
Yep.
And I can tell you that even if you tighten up that mask, it will go out to the sides.
Yep.
Right? And I know this because when you're a medical student and you're taught how to behave in an operating room, what's the first thing they do when you're supposed to, they teach you how to sneeze. You know, people might not think about that, but you're holding a retractor and the surgeon's doing his thing and you can't move and now you feel like you want to sneeze. And what you want to do is you want to go like this and get as far away from them as you can. But they tell you don't do that because you'll blow out the side of your mask right into the operative field.
Yep.
So we know these things do not. They're not hermetically sealed. They do not even collect sneeze.
So these are common understandings. How is it possible that we're being lied to about this stuff today? Like, we really need to think about that. And the only way that's possible, if there is literally at least a semi-grand, you know, that there's multiple people that are trying to deceive you for some reason.
Jesus. And so what think about, the other thing is Dr. Blaylock points out in his video that this comes from, think about walking down, they hand you one of these masks to go into the airlift mask to go into a grocery store, right? But think about what you're doing. If you really were infectious, you'd be walking down, all this plumage would come out infecting all the aisles of food.
Yep, exactly.
So now let's go to the next mask.
Not about, it's now, not, it's the least common mask. Sense thing that you could possibly think about. But that's why it's so insulting that all they could scream about is just common sense in the beginning. It's not. It's anything but common sense if you actually understand this stuff.
You see people walking around with, I don't know about you, but I've never seen one of these masks until the COVID outbreak. This is
yes, see, exactly. These are polyester masks that suddenly became used during COVID. Why? Because polyester is shown to be one of the most, outside of the jet, like, in regard to actual material coming off and breathing in, polyester is the worst. And that's been shown to increase risk of all sorts of things. But polyester and cloth masks are the two most damaging in regard to your health. So is it funny that one of the specifically most damaging in regard to things that you could breathe in off the mask are the ones that suddenly became the most used? And by the way, none of these are medically, there's not some standard they must meet. There's not some regulatory agency for masks. All they need is fabric and two ear loops, and they are sold and are somehow a medical device that stops you from dying.
Something that industry is now at least making a profit on by making these masks. And they're a more form-fit cloth multi-layer mask, right? So what you see here is he's vaping in this mask. It now is not leaking around the side. But your breath is taking the path of least resistance. It's going right out the front. So how protective is he? And also, by the remember the Chinese saying, it gets into your eyes? Is he protecting himself?
Right.
Okay, now, somebody sent me this little meme on the right. It says, this is what virologists wear to protect themselves from virus, but don't worry, your bandana works too.
Now, what's funny about these is some of these people will be like, oh, she's doing a sharing memes. No, this is a doctor who's pointing out that these memes are correct. That's what's happening, because it's ridiculous to pretend that this is how they protect themselves from this coronavirus. Right? When they're actually testing it, but your bandana will be, you're good. You'll be fine. You'll protect your grandma. It's mindlessly ridiculous.
So I got that, and I thought that was pretty fine, but I said, you know what? I want to look and see what the really latest is in the viral weapons lab. So I looked at Winnipeg, which is, by the way, is a key player in this whole thing, I think. And Dr. Ji from China, who's now somewhere behind the bamboo curtain, who's also a key player. That's her sitting at the Corona lab in Winnipeg. And I actually ran into somebody that knows that's her. Anyway, that's what she's wearing. Now, there's the actual coronavirus lab in Wuhan. Okay? They're not wearing bandanas. They're not wearing masks. They're taking, that's what real virologists do. They can't be protected otherwise. Now, let's hit the next one. Now, here's the second myth of mask wearing. And this is actually, I read this by, this doctor's actually an infectious disease doctor out west. And I read this, this was in like a not a medical journal, but just a newspaper or something. But she says, by having a mask over your face, it filters out the majority of the viral particles. So even if you do get exposed to COVID, you're going to get very little virus in. And if you get COVID, you'll get less sight.
God.
You know, that violates what her own literature is saying.
Exactly. Right. And these are people we need to understand are questionable. And I mean, I would straight up say are completely lying, but the idea that maybe she's been convinced somehow that she, that this is somehow right. But the reality is that's the point. The actual science completely contradicts that. So how are we trusting the science if what she's saying is not backed up by the science? And people like Dr. Lee Merritt here are the ones that are willing to stand up and go, guys, that's wrong. We all know that's wrong. You know that that's wrong. Why are you lying about it? And all they do is call her a conspiracy theorist or whatever else they do to undermine and disparage people that are willing to point out the reality.
Okay. I mean, the principle that there's less virus, less illness. We actually used to believe that there took a lot of virus to produce an illness, but that is a flaw based on the way we used to do the testing, the serious science. But now we believe, and that's in her literature, one virion, one influenza droplet can cause you to get the influenza.
Exactly.
And six adenovirus. So these are very, very small numbers. We're down to basically it's one particle can give you disease. But here's the next thing about it actually filtering out the majority of particles. In addition to what I just showed you with Dr. Todd, let's see the next slide. Serious scientists did things like this. This is from the Maryland Institute of Applied Environmental Health in 2013, and they actually put people with influenza in a hermetically sealed container. They put them in different kinds of masks and they had them breathe. And a couple things that comes out of this and some other similar studies. The first thing is, yes, it does keep the big particles in, okay? What gets out are the very small particles. And here's the catcher. When they actually cultured these things, they found the big particles don't have live virus in it. It's the tiny...
Exactly. And we have been saying this since the beginning of this entire thing because I listened to the experts, not the mindless people on mainstream media. They're telling you that, yes, the droplets can get through, but the droplets have dead virus in them. Remember, we've talked about this. You can't even understand how frustrating this must be for me because of how long we have been pointing to the, I mean, I thought this would be over the moment we did our first show on the map. This is great. Look at this. We proved it. It's over. It's just, nope. Do another one. It must be over now. Nope. Like five shows just on masks, and it's so clear. And it just, again, it comes down to people that are willing to trust what they're told about the science because they believe those authority figures would never lie to them instead of just looking at it. That's that ridiculous.
Particles that have the live virus in. So your mask is saving yourself, you're saving all this dead virus, and you're letting the live stuff go.
Yep.
And, yeah, so next slide. Now, this is also reproduced in a less technical way. Dr. Kim in South Korea, he had COVID patients. He put them in a special hermetically sealed room, certain ventilation, and he had them cough repeatedly into an area, standard distance for petri dishes or environment or viral media. And he did it with a surgical mask, cloth mask, no mask. And although there was a little bit of diminution in the number of actual cultures that grew, it wasn't appreciable. It's not going to stop people from getting infected.
Yep.
Whether you were one or not, you coughed out infectious material that we could culture in a real-world scenario. Now, if you're going to read one article on masks, this is the one I would read.
Right. Now, I'm going to go ahead and stop it there just in the interest of time. I'm going to probably continue more on this, but it's just a good segue into what I was going to show you myself. There's a lot of good information on here. She goes over more myths and everything. And maybe I'll make a point to share, kind of play this as we go forward as well. But since, you know, we're already past 2 hours here, the reality is the data couldn't be more clear.
It's always been there. It's always been, you know, now that, by the way, to be even more clear, that doesn't mean that if new information came up tomorrow that changed that I wouldn't add that into my opinion. But the point is, just because a new study says something different doesn't mean that you just discount every other one that's happened before. But also remember that the ones they've come out with since then have not been random controlled trials. Most of them have been peer reviewed, and they listen to them anyway because they lean into what they want it to say. Very important. But despite all that evidence, despite the fact that we can see that mask mandates are not having an effect on locations, and in most of the locations that don't have them have better numbers. This is an example right here. I thought I was looking at this one, but we'll get there. The point is, no surge in COVID 2 weeks after mask mandate lifted in Texas, showing you again that there's not, that what they keep telling you is that we do this, everyone's going to die. Well, clearly not. And more than 2 weeks, we've shown you, I showed you the graph a minute ago where it shows you that there's no discernible effect. But the U.S. Supreme, the U.K. Supreme Court judges expect people will be forced to wear masks and stay home for 10 years. In fact, it's a former British Supreme Court judge, Lord Sumption, which we talked about before. And he's the one warning that social controls brought about by the coronavirus pandemic may be kept in place by governments for up to a decade. This is what I believe as well. This is something that the reality is, as he's pointing out, it's politically unrealistic to expect governments to backtrack now. Why would they? They've set the narrative. New variants mean we have to stay on lockdown. And they're going to continue to point to new things forever. He's not wrong. So what we need is you out there listening to stand up and put your foot down and say, we're not going to allow this anymore because it's time. But going forward, this is what she was referencing, and I just happened to have it up, and I hope you check it out for yourself. An absolutely outstanding compilation. Review of scientific reports of harms caused by face masks, specifically of harms, up to February 2021. And it's incredible. As well as the Swiss policy research, which always continues to update. Looks like they haven't done it. Oh, it's still March. In April, they'll update it with anything new. Are face masks effective? The evidence. And this is the evidence. This is the evidence from the CDC, from the European CDC, from Oxford, from the Cochrane Review, from New England Journal of Medicine, from the British Medical Journal, you know, all these fake news sites. And guess what? Every single one of these completely back up what I'm saying. This is the truth, guys. I'm also going to include all the ones I've done in the past, or some of the most important ones, I would argue. The first one, the Great Mass Deception, where we go over the research in the beginning that shows you this, that shows you that this is not what they're saying. Then we continue to go forward and talk about how masks do cause bacterial pneumonia, or at least they can, 100%. Really, every time? I don't know. Can they? Yes, absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And this is what we've proven. I mean, even as I played in the past, here's James Lyons Weiler, PhD, agreeing with me.
I have an interesting theory, and really it's based on the facts and the science, that there is an issue happening, especially with the season, in regard to the masking and bacterial buildup that is causing bacterial pneumonia. And it seems like a basic conclusion to come to, but it's big conspiracy theory today to even make such a claim. But I find if you have thoughts, go ahead.
Well, not my thoughts. They're the thoughts of Jim Meehan. I interviewed him on my podcast on Breaking Science. I'm sorry to interrupt, but Jim Meehan, MD, he said, if you mask all day long and you mask these kids all day long, they're going to get bacterial infections. Adults are going to get bacterial pneumonia. It's a given in medicine that that's going to happen.
A given. Isn't that interesting? But we're all fake news crazy, right? But the last one, mask madness. One that was edited by Brock West. Masks are making you sick, and it seems that is simply part of the plan. Now, this is one where I really dive into why I think I believe it's almost impossible to think that they don't know this is the case after all this time. So how can you not deduce that at the very least they're okay with it happening, right? But hopefully you'll look through all this for yourself and come to your own conclusions, which is all we can ask, which is literally the opposite of what the mainstream media asks. They, in fact, demand your acquiescence at your complete blind faith in whatever they have to say. We want you to think for yourselves, research the information, and come to your own conclusions. And you know what? If you think that we're consistently wrong, then go watch somewhere else. I'm not saying that. I hope you stay. My point is that you can make that choice for yourself. That's not what you get from these places. They tell you, like the Financial Times, and say, this is the truth. No source material, no backing it up. Just believe us because we're the mainstream media. That's not how life works. And you should know that by now. I'm glad you're here because it means you're at least willing to consider that something is amiss. Keep fighting. Keep pushing. Because this is not over. but we're making a difference. I love you all. Thank you for being here. As always, question everything, absolutely everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's non-essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential. Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We cut off people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself. But what's happening now as unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours is pulled under your nose.
There's a note that says
I don't have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
You just do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen, get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.